Not Again by Stain. It's been number one for 6 weeks.
That does it for this week. Thanks to the Sick Puppies for hanging out with us.
If you missed any part of the show, check out the chart and Six Picks at thesideshowcountdown.com. I'm Nikki Six.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
We'll see you freaks next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done. WRAF and WRAF HD1 Detroit. The Weekend is brought to you by Bell Tire. With over 80 locations, they are in your neighborhood. Call 888-GO-BELL or log on belltire.com. Everything rocks.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Hi, Jolene.
Peter, hello.
And folks, welcome to Occupy WRIF.
That's right. That's pretty much it every Sunday night.
Yeah. Glad that you're tuning by. If you're just caught this by accident, we take a little break from the great riff rock and roll, and we get your opinions on the air. It's a political phone-in talk show. What a concept.
I know.
It's been around for a few days. Do I have everything up always? Too loud. There you go.
Okay. Are you all better?
Yeah, I'm all better. Good. And we can't do it without your participation. And what you do after listening to Jolene and me, give our opinions, you give yours. Real easy. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Okay, by the way, we have a Facebook page, but a couple people have been writing. Did I send you that? And they said, well, I don't know how to become a friend.
Oh, well, we're a group, so you have to like it.
You just have to
like it. And then you are our friend.
I never understood it either.
Yeah, you know. It's well, because you're not on it.
I'm not on it. You and
Debbie. Don't worry your little pretty head about it.
Yeah, so we would like people to like us.
Yes, and we love that. We've been growing. We're pretty active on here.
Everybody likes to be liked. So do we.
Yeah.
So it's facebook.com/nightcall. How come we got that real simple one? Because
a lot of them
have all these numbers and letters.
I think we were lucky.
Right. And right now, hey, thanks to Ron, by the way, and also to Athena and Sarah putting together the podcast. We've had some trouble with them the last couple of weeks, technical issues, so we had to take down the last 2 weeks if you're looking for them. And thanks to those of you who have written in and described a couple
of the
problems.
Issue is.
Yeah.
You know, it is so highly technical, and things change all the time, even though you have a studio set up. They change things in there. And so we get some hiccups once in a while, but we hope that's over.
And I have no idea what it is. Like Ron said, well, what's the problem? I said, I don't know.
But that's pretty much how it's been every time this has happened.
Yeah, well, you know, never mind. I don't want to talk about my knowledge or lack of knowledge about technology, because as you know, before I sound like Regis or somebody like that, that I have great technical skills with some computer programs and zero with others.
Yeah, you really do.
Thank you. All right. If you've been reading, who reads papers anymore? I do.
You know what's funny? I was thinking about this. I come in, I DJ for a different station here within the cluster. And
that's not a cluster F, by the way.
Yeah, right. Our group of radio stations.
We have a group of radio stations.
We're a family.
Yeah, greater media.
Anyway, I come in Sundays at noon, and you know the paper comes. I'm the first person. I come in at Saturdays at 3. That's my point. And I'm the first person to go outside and get the newspapers. No one else who works here gets the newspaper.
Well,
come on, people, read a paper.
We used to say, if you read the news, you'll never know, which is taking their expression, if you read the news, you'll know. And because they always misrepresented almost everything important. But they've been pretty good on the Occupy movements lately, to the point where they even had a link to the live streaming of Occupy Detroit.
Yeah.
And do we have to explain what the Occupy movement is?
I don't think so, because it is so mainstream now. I mean, everyone, it's in people's, people are joking about it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I'm at... say the Como's down the street, currently occupying Como's, and they're just having dinner. I mean, it is going on like crazy.
Yeah, well, I have a button on that says Occupy Detroit.
You do. I want one of those.
Right. Well, you want this?
I do.
Here.
Thanks.
Careful.
Hey, here we go. Thank you.
Oops, sorry. We didn't get it during the break. Anyways, all of now what you see primarily about the Occupy movement is Occupy protesters arrested in Texas and Oregon. That's tonight.
Portland and Denver.
And, I mean, it's all over. And this one, Denver police move into Occupy protest encampment. So it's sort of devolved down into this dispute by these with the unarmed protesters and these heavily armed police acting on the bidding of mayors. And some of these mayors are pretty liberal, like the mayor of Oakland, California, where the worst incident occurred, that an Iraq veteran who had served two tours of in Iraq had come back and then was wounded critically by an Oakland cop.
Fracturing
his skull badly. Yeah, but one of the things I wanted to say is that there is about 1,500 Occupy sites around the world. And
amazing.
Hundreds and hundreds, thousands of, well, not thousands, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in the United States alone. And here is what the Occupy movement are not about.
Okay.
They are not about occupying and holding public space, which, although important, is not what it's all about.
Right.
Also, that the outrageous use of police violence against protesters is not what this is all about, the Occupy movement, although that should be discussed, and there are some very important events happening in Oakland on November 2nd. It's not about the encampments themselves, although they have some interesting aspects of it to them as well. What it's about is a confrontation with the money power, with the power of wealth and how it affects all of us, how the 1% can control the 99% of us. It controls every aspect of life on this planet to the detriment of the vast majority of us. And that's what it's all about. And it doesn't matter whether you think people should occupy public space or not, whether you think cops should kick people's butt or not, whether or not you think some of these people that Fox News finds that are kind of strange and that they, you know, that are wandering around these encampments. And I say, Gaia bless the weird and the strange.
Well, you know, we can all coexist, is my point. You know, why can't we just all get along? And it takes all types to
move the world. Yeah, and also, I mean, there are people that, I mean, what sometimes when you see the, you know, you say, whoa, why did they let them get on television or radio to represent the Occupy movement? They'd be like the worst spokesperson in the world.
Yeah,
because
ratings.
They've been sought out.
Yeah, they got to get the juiciest one on there.
Yeah, because
they want to get people's attention.
Yeah, and who?
The media.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember I said that there was somebody carrying a sign in New York that said, am I dressed too well to be interviewed by you?
Yeah, that was good.
One of the things that happens in very coherent political movements, like with a political party, with a union, something else like that. Spokespeople are appointed by the organization.
Yes.
Maybe the union movement is the best. So there is a director of public relations, or they appoint someone to speak to the media. There's nothing like this here. This is a totally spontaneous movement.
Grassroots movement.
Anybody can come there. Sometimes people wish certain people weren't there.
Yeah.
And there's been, you know, a number of issues like that. But the center on that, or to center on all of the rest, or any of those particular aspects, to the detriment of the central issue, the undemocratic control of this 1% over the rest of us, and maybe, you know, like you and I, if we happen to be middle class, well, you know, just our rate of compensation over the last 30 years, if we're that old, hasn't gone up that much. That's not good. If you're living at the bottom end of the social pyramid in this country, let alone the bottom section of the world pyramid, well, then you're really being hurt terribly by this 1%. Yeah. Then this means the most awful living conditions.
No chance of getting out of it for many.
Why do I always forget this man's name? But he wrote a book called A Planet of Slums. 50% of the people in the world now live in slums in these huge cities in Latin America, Asia, and Africa, some of them which have 5 and 6 million people, like the size of Chicago. And I could probably read a list of them. And when I read this list, and I think it was done purposely by the author, Mike is his first name. I'm honing in on the author's name, he purposely didn't identify what country they are. And I'm thinking, I never heard of any of these cities, and they all got over 5 million people. So as the population increases, and as what has happened universally in this country, happened in Europe, happened, and it's happening all the rest of the world, people are pretty much driven off of the land and their traditional ways of providing food for their family through farming, and are crowded into these cities. It happened in Europe in the 15th century. It happened in this century, in the 20th century. People came up from the South to work in Detroit auto plants. They weren't teeming slums, although to some extent in some cities there were. Well, we're up to 7 billion people now.
I know. Yeah. That was the news this week.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I want to talk about the way the police have treated people. I want to talk about the legitimacy of holding public space. I want to talk about, just the encampments themselves. Or maybe some of you that are involved in this can give us a shout on it. It's 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Oh, yeah, if you'd like to email us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And just all throughout this, in fact, let's do it. I got so many pieces of paper, I don't even know how to really begin. Should we? All right, let's take some of the most dramatic stuff that's going on now. And that is the decision on all sorts of politicians, many of them liberal politicians like the governor of New York, Cuomo, the mayor of Oakland, mayor of San Francisco, mayor of Portland. They've all decided that these people's presence is inconvenient for one reason or another.
I'm so surprised at such a liberal city, especially as Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea, and I guess people aren't just, or are you? Are you horrified at what some of the scenes that you've seen on television? I mean, in some cases, people have reacted back when all of a sudden they were attacked by riot uniformed clad police that were using chemical weapons and it's just
rubber bullets. Rubber bullets, which are actually just bullets covered by rubber.
Yeah, exactly. And there's I wonder if I maybe I didn't bring that, but the Oakland police had actually signed an order in 2003 to demilitarize their police response to protests.
Okay.
In other words, that they wouldn't come there ready for battle with similarly armed opponents on the other side. Because, these people aren't protesters. They're not marchers. They're not activists. They're not militants. They are citizens, and they are our neighbors. Whether you agree with them politically, whether you think their methods of camping is legitimate or not.
It's peaceful. I don't get why
these
anyone
These are
care.
People whose rights, our fellow citizens, that is guaranteed under the First Amendment. Now, you can say, they don't have to camp in a public park. Well, maybe they don't. Then I would ask you, if you don't think they should, what should they do?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the conservatives are trying to delegitimize them on every basis possible, mostly on personal stuff. Look, there's a photograph of one of them defecating on a police car. Did you ever see that shot?
Oh, yes.
But you know what? This guy, all you could see was he had his pants down and he had his bare butt leaning against a cop car.
Maybe he was mentally ill.
Maybe he was mentally ill. Maybe he wasn't defecating.
Absolutely.
Maybe he was just pulling up his pants,
right,
or something like that. Or any number of things. Anybody can come down to those things. You don't have to be a member of anything. When the union people take part in these Occupy actions, they're very disciplined. Because they're disciplined at work, they're disciplined
they're organized.
Through the union. They're organized. That's a better word than discipline. There's no organization other than voluntary organization. And if you want to, and that has been a problem in some of these encampments about people acting out.
Well, there's always that factor in any kind of large gathering like that.
Yeah. Now, I saw, for some reason or other, two of the most, I saw it for some reason or other. I looked at it. That's what I saw. But some videos that actually almost ruined my dinner. And those, maybe they were a little more subtle. They probably went by a lot of people. In Denver, well, here, let me read this. As Denver police move into Occupy protest encampment. To begin with, why in the world should they do that? Remember I mentioned last week that woman had that sign said, sorry for the inconvenience, we're trying to change the world.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I was talking about the conservatives trying to delegitimize the movement by ad hominem attacks, attacks on the people. They are conservatives because they're trying to conserve the world as it is. They want to continue the reign of the 1%. I mean, they'll talk, oh, we don't like government and all that, but they're worse than anything you can imagine because they want to take even more regulations off of corporations and financial institutions.
When we need more.
When we need more and more and more. They want to continue to poison the planet, but take off any of the regulations that exist on environmental damage and let these planet wreckers continue on their way. So on one hand, they're trying to conserve things as they are. In other words, maintain the rule of the 1%, which means, in fact, they are the stooges of the ultra wealthy. So here you got working class and middle class men and women, mostly men, that are stooges for the ultra rich.
It's really
sad. Pathetic.
It's pathetic. It's pathetic. And it's really hard to muster any compassion.
Yeah.
It's hard.
So what happened in Denver, I don't know if you saw the films, but the police spokesman for the Denver cops said, we showed great restraint. We were calm. We went in and did what we had to do. There's a group of very committed people who believe in a cause, and then there are a few people who just want to cause trouble. I don't think he was talking about the Denver police, but that's actually who it was. So these cops that are completely clad in, you know, RoboCop outfits, using chemical weapons, and somewhere or other, wait a minute, where did it say? Oh, yeah, the spokesman said protesters kicked police. What do you think? I mean, do you really? Does anybody, I mean, this stuff gets written. I'm sure he said this. Do you think a protester went up and said, there's a police officer, and he's got a 3-foot riot stave, and he's got, face mask on, mm-hmm. and helmets and shin guards. I'm going to kick him.
I mean, you know, I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't believe it at all. These guys are liars. And that phrase, demonstrators clashed with police.
It's like, no, the police clashed with the, clashed toward demonstrators.
Yeah, it means that the cops kicked the crap out of a bunch of people running around in shorts and flip-flops while they're in their RoboCop outfits.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, it says, Murray said protesters kicked police and knocked one officer off his motorcycle. Now, I saw the film of that.
Okay.
And it was on a right-wing site to show how it said, thugs attack motorcycle cop.
Oh, God.
And I'm going, man, these guys must really be out of control to attack a police officer on a motorcycle.
In riot gear on a motorcycle.
Here's the way it went down. These cops are riding across where these people have been living. And one young guy stupidly pushed this cop on a motorcycle.
Mm.
And the bike went over. It's a big, heavy Harley,
yeah.
Right? And the cop, didn't like fall over with it, but, you know, kind of, I don't know if you've seen that, kind of like,
I didn't want to watch it.
Jumped off.
Yeah.
And, and kind of lost his balance, but never even hit the cop, didn't even hit the ground.
Okay.
Or did he? But anyway, in any event, he leaped up immediately
and ran,
after the guy, chased the guy that did it, and that's an assault. Okay. I mean, provocation
what the kid
on the
did was an assault.
Yeah, it was a provocation on the part of the police to do that. But you don't, we learned in kindergarten, two wrongs don't make a right, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they tackle this guy and they're slamming him, you know, into this grass, and suddenly this squad of police riflemen,
whoa,
with assault rifles, have their rifles, and they make this perimeter around him. Now, again, these are our neighbors. These are people who are there to protest the 1% controlling our lives, destroying our economy, bailing out the banks, destroying the middle class, and they're having rifles pulled on them by the Denver police.
Yeah, exactly. It's out of control.
Yeah. What does it say on my website? Cops gone wild.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, most police don't relish that kind of activity. Most,
I agree.
Most police are in this. Pardon me, to stop crime, to direct traffic, to make sure that that the laws, and that's their job. But there's a few in every police department, and there's not a police officer alive that won't tell you that there are some people on the forces, and they, you know, And one of the things you know you get to do, you get to be the law. You're not really the law. You're the people that are supposed to enforce
law,
carry out the law. But that love to beat the crap out of people.
Yep.
Usually they're protected by other officers on the force. I mean, it's the dirty little secret of police forces all around the world.
Yeah, they get excited when the protests come because they know they're going to get to play.
Yeah. And if you've got all these weapons like flash grenades and rubber bullets and what have you,
tasers.
And tasers and what have you. Napoleon said there was only one thing you cannot do with bayonets, and that's sit on them. In other words, you got to use them. Now, one of the things that's been happening, let me see if it's in this article, and continually you hear, well, we had to get rid of them, like in Atlanta, because in a press conference, another liberal mayor, Kasim Reed, in Atlanta said he cited the additional $100,000 in beefed up police presence for Saturday alone as his officers worked overtime in 12-hour shifts. And I've just got too many of these. Everywhere you see it, they keep talking about overtime. They're having to pay, you know, increasing overtime, and it's in a. And you go, wow, yeah, man, these protesters. Yeah. Well, for one thing, the Constitution does not say that you have the right to assemble for redress of grievances unless it happens to cost the city overtime.
Right, that part's not included.
That part is not in there. So it is the duty of the police not to destroy the right. And again, it wasn't like the police said, "Hey Jim, I don't like those guys over there. Let's go force them out of the camp." Let's get together. Get everybody from the 9th precinct. We'll go over there and kick some butt.
They were told.
They were ordered there by the political administration of the given cities. Conservatives, liberals, didn't matter. They were the ones that were, that were attacked. They're the ones that, and they could have been told very easily by the political powers that be, look, we want you to understand that the people out there are our fellow citizens of Atlanta and Denver and the rest of these places, Austin, Texas. I mean, it goes on and on where they've been attacked, New York City. And here's what I would pose to police. What if those actually were your neighbors and your parents and your aunts and uncles and your nieces doing that? How would you act? Okay, you've just been told you have to move these people. But you go, wait a minute. These are people out there I love. These are people who I want to protect from injury, although they're doing something I've been ordered to have them stop. How do I creatively end this so that I don't wind up fracturing the skull of an Iraq veteran, that I don't go trampling over kids? And I saw these cops, I can't even remember where it was, just turning over the tables and trashing all the stuff of these people.
I mean, why the hell do they have to do that?
Yeah, yeah. How? And I would ask them, how could they sit around and say, all right, how can we do this so nobody gets hurt? And how can we work so I don't lose my humanity by pepper spraying some 17-year-old girl? And, and I don't pull rifles on my fellow citizens who aren't doing a damn thing.
Yeah.
But anyway... Something with our voices.
It's that time of
year. It's this time of year, yeah.
Well, we've been out protesting.
Okay,
too.
So here is, there was Occupy Ferndale, wasn't there? On Friday.
Yeah, I was down there.
You were there?
Yeah.
I was.
Cool.
I hate to say it. Never mind. I won't even say what I was doing. That's terrible. hey, I deserve a rest once in a while. But, So all these cities are complaining about how much overtime because they have to, and money they have to pay because the police are,
working. Yeah.
Which the cops love, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Dough.
Yeah, they get a lot of dough. How about Detroit? Well, I was down at Occupy Detroit at Grand Circus Park, and this woman, Sarah, who was one of the police, or one of the camp spokespeople.
Yeah.
Was there when I was standing there when this, I think it was a lieutenant, and he walked up and he said, "Hi, Sarah, how you doing?"
No kidding.
Yeah. I didn't tell you this?
No, this is great.
He said, "No, how's it going here?" And she said, "Well, there's some issues." And he said, "How can I help?"
Wow.
This is real.
We've got it going on. It's really going well here.
He said, and then she laid out the issues, and he pulled out a pad of paper, and he said, "Well, do you need," and I don't want to talk about what it was. And she said, yeah. And he said, is 10 okay? And she said, well, I could really use 20. And he said, okay, I think we can arrange
my
that.
My gosh.
Wrote all this down like this. And so, and she said, are you coming to the benefit tonight? This was on Wednesday because they had a benefit at LAX, this club right off of Grand Circus Park.
Oh, okay.
So they may, I doubt if they're spending very much on overtime. And when you go down there, you go, where's the RoboCops? There ain't any.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And the camp for a big city ain't too pretty, you know?
Well,
and sometimes there's issues down there.
I think it's kind of charming over there.
And sometimes
I got invited to the Knitting and Craft Circle.
Really?
For Occupy Detroit, even though I don't do either.
But let's, okay, so I said I didn't want to, I didn't want to go too much on all the issues having to do with police assaults on the protesters and how absolutely illegitimate it is, and I hope, by the way, that that this mayor of Oakland is recalled. They are already beginning a recall.
Yeah,
effort.
I saw that.
I'm trying to think, what in the world is happening with my voice?
I don't know. I can give you an email that we got from Cody.
Yeah.
And he said he's been hearing more and more about these pointless attacks on the protesters, especially the former Marine. While the protesters were carrying the Marine away, they launched even more tear gas at him. He said he was defenseless, and he said it's freaking outrageous.
Here's the deal. The veteran, Scott Olson, was critically injured on Tuesday night when he was hit in the head with a projectile, which was probably either a tear gas grenade or a rubber bullet, thrown or shot by law enforcement officers combating protesters.
Yeah.
Who are, here's their crime, folks. And maybe they deserve it, huh? Here's what they were trying to do, these horrible people. Trying to re-enter a downtown plaza.
Oh, that is just unforgivable.
Last I heard, downtown plazas were public space.
Yeah.
Right?
Kim wrote in and said, sure is odd how we back the rights of citizens of the Arab Spring to protest, but we suppress our own citizens right here.
Thank you. Yeah. There it is, too. Activists with Occupy Oakland are promoting a general strike across the city on Wednesday and are urging other groups nationwide to organize similar events. And there is going to be a solidarity march from Occupy Detroit. And let me see. I think it is, I should have this in front of me, but it's occupy-detroit.us. I'm sure it is.
Okay.
Occupy-detroit.us. You go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and you can hook up. And so far, the Carpenters Union, an SEIU local, and I haven't heard from the ILWU. What is it? International Longshoremen Warehouses Union? Mm-hmm. They're pretty rad. They've had.
They really are.
They're rad, yeah. And here, Local 713 of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters stands in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street movement. We support the right of all working people to organize and peacefully assemble to demand their rights. We agree that the 1% should not continue to go untaxed while 99% face layoffs, pay and benefit cuts, foreclosures, and the closing of our children's schools and our public services. We further strongly condemn the police brutality used against the Occupy Oakland movement and the devastating injury inflicted on Iraq veteran Scott Olson. We further resolve to support the call of 2,000 Oaklanders at Occupy Oakland for a one-day strike in Oakland for Wednesday, November 2nd, to protest our country's rising inequality and the brutal actions of the police in the city of Oakland, California. And they sent this to Mayor Gene Kwan and the Oakland Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things, let me tell you this, too, about police being ordered there. During the newspaper strike against the News and the Free Press 10 and 15 years ago,
right.
And so one of the things the strikers did was to block the trucks from exiting this plant in Sterling Heights, was it, I believe, out on Mound Road. And they had to call up hundreds and hundreds of police officers from all these different
precincts.
Towns.
Oh, yeah.
Towns. And one of the things that the Macomb County sheriffs did, who are unionized, they took out ads in the strike paper saying, we support the right of unions to strike.
Yeah,
in other words, they were saying, look, you know, we're here ordered to protect
but
the
we
bosses.
Still support you.
But that's not what we want to do. And they're not at the point of, going rogue.
Right.
In fact, let me see if I can get to this. Here, do you folks know what Anonymous is? Do you know, Jalene? Anonymous is that group, that online group that usually has videos that are that the spokesperson wears the mask of V for Vendetta.
Oh, sure.
Which I have one. We talked about this. This is our Halloween costume. And they have these voice distorters.
Okay.
But this is anonymous, and their message to Scott Olson. He's the wounded Iraq veteran who made it through two tours of Iraq.
Got his skull fractured by the riot police.
Yeah.
Scott Olson, it has come to our attention that you have been critically injured by the Oakland Police Department for standing up for the American people's First Amendment rights. The honor and courage you have displayed on the battlefield is only overshadowed by the cowardice and dishonor displayed by those who have committed these inhumane crimes against you. As you stand in solidarity with the people of the world, Anonymous stand in solidarity with you, Scott. A bullet to the head of our brother is a bullet to the head of us all. We may not share the physical pain and hardships you are enduring, but know that we feel the emotional turmoil that comes along with this injury that being inflicted on you has been inflicted on all free Americans. You are a veteran of foreign war, a brave soldier who has stood up for his people in the face of death in a strange land. Whether our presence in the Middle East is justified or not, we commend those brave men and women who defend our constitutional rights from enemies, both foreign and domestic. In standing your ground in Oakland, you have become one of the few Americans who have done both. For your efforts, we will not give you an award or medal. These tokens are meaningless. For your efforts, we will bestow upon you the highest honor a man could receive, the love and solidarity of your fellow free men and women around the world. You have shown us that freedom of speech comes with a price, and how to stand firm in the face of tyranny. From Anonymous and the free people of the world, we love you and hope you get well very soon.
That's great.
Yeah, that voice, too, is...
That was eerie, the whole thing.
Yeah, well, it was very mechanical. And if you want to, and there's some video with it as well, if you want to see that, you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. All right, we're going to come back. I want to take your calls. Got some stuff about religion, doing wrong, as usual, but doing right, surprisingly.
Wow.
Yeah, and also, is a fertilized egg a person?
Oh, is a corporation a person?
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Trojan Man!
Attention, pleasure seekers. Trojan Bearskin Condoms are bringing couples closer than ever before. At an amazing 40% thinner than our standard condoms, couples are literally singing their praises.
Irresistible closeness. Yeah. We're in passionate harmony.
Wow.
Together as one, more connected than ever before.
Now that's pretty close.
Trojan Bearskin Condoms with triple tested quality. Trojan, America's number one most trusted condom brand.
Can't wait to get it on.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes in day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much for talking about the Occupy movement, Occupy WRIF, Occupy Night Call. You can do that by phoning in. Let us know your sense of it all. You know, just a little sidebar here. Let me see. Does it give? Let me give people proper credit here. I can't find this. Detroit, oh, yeah, Metro Detroit Chevy dealers doing this nice charitable work for the families of veterans and active duty GIs.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people that are in that position of being in the service
have to have benefits?
Why do they have to have benefits?
To support them because they should be totally and completely taken care of from beginning to end?
Yeah, you think?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hats off to the Metro Chevy dealers for stepping in like that.
Yeah, because clearly they're not getting what they deserve.
Here, this from Jerry writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter and Jillian, yes, you can be the first to report. Occupy Wall Street does have a goal, and it ain't that hard to figure out what it is. Except for foreign news broadcasts, most of the reports find the meaning elusive. Anti-corporate, they'll say, we don't know what the message is. Anti-corruption is as simple as the message gets. Ever see a bunch of people dress up in hockey gear and not intend to get on the ice for hockey? In my humble opinion, same for riot gear. They intend to get into a riot.
Yeah, that's a good point, really good one.
Yeah.
And then Tom wrote in and said he and his wife have been taking groceries and propane down to Occupy Detroit.
Grand Circus Park.
And he said, you know, if everyone donated $1 or $5 to them, they could get all the way through spring on the help of the people. So, you know, go down to Grand Circus Park and drop it off.
And by the way, I don't think there's too many of them, of you rather, including me, and I suspect including Jalene, that are going to go there and camp.
Well, yeah, I have, you know, I have things. I have animals.
Right.
I have things going on.
And sometimes when I visited, there's very little going on. You know, so, but there's a number of events coming up, and you can go to their website and hook into those. And one of the things is it's okay to go down by yourself. It's okay to go down with a family or a friend. But it's better if you're part of a group, like a union local or a church or whatever.
No, I don't think it's better. I think it's just go, no matter what you are.
Right. So,
Peter, I posted something on my Facebook page that says, it's a woman holding a sign that says, if you don't understand why we are here, but you can name all of the Kardashians, it's time to turn off the TV and pay attention.
That's good. One of the things I didn't say, remember I was saying what really what the Occupy movement about is confronting the money power. And this is interesting. I think I may have even stole this concept from my guest that will be on at 1 a.m., Jeffrey Winters, who has written a book called Oligarchy. Oligarchy is the rule of a few, and obviously talking about the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
But he said this is the first time in over 100 years that there's been a mass-based movement challenging the power of wealth. And you go, wait a minute, hasn't there been a lot of it? Yeah, but most of it was saying, hey, you're excluding us from fully participating in our society. You know, going kind of backwards chronologically, you know, I'm gay, I want to be in. I'm a woman, I want to be in. I'm African-American, I want to be in. I want full recognition of my humanhood and great struggles over
great?
That. Yeah, well, there's been a lot of gains, but it hasn't been about challenging how decisions are made and by whom in a so-called democratic society. And if you have a pyramid with a real sharp little tip with about 0.1% hauling in billions while people at the bottom making squat, that's not a democracy at all. It's an oligarchy or a plutocracy, which they used to call over 100 years ago, the old movement that said, hey, we're being misruled. To be sure. In fact, we don't even want to be ruled at all.
Damn it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get, we've been remiss with a lot of you folks. If I can get this little baby to cooperate, which it doesn't seem to be willing to do. How interesting. Okay. Let me try that. There you go.
What's going on, Peter?
Okay. Why can't I make this out? Here is Jerry in St. Clair Shores. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter, Jolene. How are you?
Hi. What's happening?
Yeah, I just want to give this little police issue a local flavor. I don't know if you've been following the story of the 7-year-old girl that was shot during a police raid in Detroit.
Yeah, yes, right.
Now the officer's going on trial this week, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Well, his trial will be in April.
Oh.
This week, the judge residing over the case revealed that she's married to a Detroit police officer.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Well, she should recuse herself, obviously.
Well, neither, she asked both the prosecution and the defense whether either of those parties had a problem with that. Neither of them had said they had any problem with that.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I just want to get your opinion on the implications, the larger implications of what that may all mean.
Well, it's a little hard to say without knowing all the details, but one of the things, there shouldn't even be the appearance of impropriety or prejudicial behavior on the part of anybody involved in the administration of justice. So I'm surprised that the judge didn't immediately say, hey, you know, you're going to have to get somebody
else. I can't do
this. Yeah. Yeah, I can't do this. Because either way, it's going to look like the fix is in, right?
Well, that's absolutely the case. You know, I've mentioned this before on this program. I'd like to reiterate the point that I'm not really anti-police. I look at the police much in the way we look at fire. Everyone understands we have to have fire to heat our homes, to cook our food, to provide energy and whatnot. But we also understand the consequences when fire gets out of control. And we go to great lengths to keep it under control because we understand the disproportionate impact it has on the environment around it.
Yeah.
It's the same with law enforcement. We're a nation that's founded on the principles, the rule of law. It only stands to reason that we have to have people with the power and the authority to enforce those laws. But when the people that we appoint take that power and authority and use it to place themselves above the law, that is the very definition of being out of control. And when you have that dense, concentrated of power, it's going to have a disproportionate impact on the environment and our government and whatnot around it. This case exemplifies that fact. When you see an issue like this, how could any of us sit on a jury and render a verdict under the criteria of beyond a reasonable doubt based on this kind of corruption and obvious hubris?
Yeah, well, I mean,
this model can also be extended to our financial institutions. Through the process of deregulation and things like that, we understand, and campaign finance law and all that, when these people have been deregulated and they've been able to buy out their government, we see that they've had a disproportionate impact on the society.
Well, yeah, and to think that rather than understanding that in the economic arena, that this is the core of the problem, that Reaganomics, which allows the market to be free of regulation, is what has destroyed our economy and almost, and don't count it out yet, the possibility of the whole world economy collapsing. These people, these conservatives, they want more. Let's deregulate things even more.
Deregulate everything.
Let's deregulate everything. All right, Jerry, thank you very much for calling. 313-298-WRIF. And I did want to say, Mike and Tristan, hold on, and we will get to you. Now, I'm not putting all this stuff in the right.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not. Here. He's talking about a couple of points about world religion. This is in Iraq. A twin bombing killed 18 people in a Shiite neighborhood of Baghdad on Thursday. Police officials said the first explosion at a music store killed 2 people, and then a second bomb was set off. So this is these fundamentalists objecting to music.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. But here, even I was really surprised. Pope Benedict XVI acknowledged Thursday, quote, with great shame, that Christianity had used force in its history. Well,
you still are.
A little, yeah. The Crusades, Inquisitions, religious wars in Europe, the invasion and occupation of the Western Hemisphere. So, yeah, I mean, he's on to something.
They're forcing their ideals onto women and... You know,
but listen, let's take our hats off to him if you're wearing one. He joined about 300 religious leaders from around the world in condemning violence and terrorism in God's name. And wouldn't that be sweet if all these people acting in their particular God's name just would back off a little bit? And Pope Benedict says, yes, it is true. In the course of history, force has also been used in the name of Christian faith. We acknowledge it with great shame, but it is utterly clear that this was an abuse of the Christian faith, one that evidently contradicts true nature.
There's so much contradiction.
Yeah, I would.
In its true nature, that we could sit here for, we could have a marathon.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when something is so prevalent, when the, you know, the church, and oh, I forgot the witch trials, all of that stuff. When it's that prevalent, to say that that's not its core definition. Well, I don't want to bang them for that.
Oh, well, what you know it? What? Why not?
Well, okay.
Seriously, Peter.
What's OWG?
What's you that? Mean OMG?
No, I know what OMG means. What's it says OWG?
Oh, maybe it's O.
I don't know. Okay. How about this? The Vatican called. This is incredible. The Vatican called on Monday for the establishment. Whoa, you ready for this?
What?
Conservatives.
Yes.
And conspiracists, no. Global public authority, and a central world bank, 666, I think we're coming into
1984.
But he's talking about having a global public authority and a central world bank to rule over financial institutions that have become outdated and often ineffective in dealing fairly with crises. Now, he's being kind of nice. I mean, dealing fairly. The document from the Vatican's Justice and Peace Department should please the Occupy Wall Street demonstrators and similar movements around the world who have protested against the economic downturn. It's not just against the economic downturn. It's the fact that the rich are getting richer and everyone else is getting poorer. Because there's X amount of wealth, and how do you split it up? Well, we're going to take it all because we're in the 1%. And let's see, the economic and financial crisis which the world is going through calls everyone, individuals and peoples, to examine in depth the principles and the cultural and moral values at the basis of social coexistence. And in many ways, that's what the Occupy movement's all about. And the statement read by the Pope condemned what it called the idolatry of the market.
Oh.
Are we changing our mind about this guy? I mean, this is good.
Yeah.
As well as.
We're not, though.
Neoliberal thinking. And neoliberal thinking is not traditionally what we think of as liberal. Something else. I don't even want to get into it. And said it looked exclusively at technical solutions to economic problems, mostly austerity. So when you. In fact, saying neoliberal probably confuses a lot of people.
Because of neocon and.
Yeah, all that. But the neoliberal policies are all about austerity. In other words, the banks failed, the financial institutions have screwed everybody up. So the poor are of our society, and when I say the poor, I mean everybody below the ultra-rich, have to pay for it. So the rich screwed up, the non-rich pay for it. That's neoliberalism. In fact, the crisis has revealed behaviors like selfishness, collective greed, and hoarding of goods on a great scale, adding that the world economics needed an ethic of solidarity among rich and poor nations. This is from the Catholic Church. And, you know, they're good on a lot of social issues. Yeah,
we were marching with some, I think there were some priests, a couple.
Yeah, I mean, we know a lot of religious
people. Yeah, we do.
If no solutions are found, according to this document issued by the Pope, if no solutions are found to the various forms of injustice, the negative effects that will follow on the social, political, and economic level will be destined to create a climate of growing hostility and even violence and ultimately undermine the very foundations of democratic institutions, even the ones considered most solid. This is a warning from the Pope. That he's saying that unless we have some equality in the world, unless we solve the problems of the poor, without me even going into it, you know how the poor live in this world. Billions and billions of people living in abject poverty, and I forgot how many, somewhere in all this.
50% of the world's population
live in slums. Yeah. And, but somewhere along the, somewhere in all this, I have this figure saying, that the richest people, I think it's like 1.5 million people, are worth $14 trillion.
Jeez.
You know that? You get that? So if you took $13 trillion from these people, just took it, confiscated it, went into their accounts
again,
and grabbed it, some, you know, commie confiscation of wealth, whatever you want to call it. Or how about what the Pope is talking about, this human solidarity, an ethic of solidarity. Left these 1.5 million people with $1 trillion to split up among themselves. So they, can't do the math, but they'd have tens of millions, right? So they're going to be hurting. And this is enough wealth spread equitably throughout the world that almost all of the problems that we face as material problems that we face could be eliminated. But the greed and the nature of the political and economic systems that we're ruled under condemn billions of people to poverty. Now, You know, I go through neighborhoods and everything looks just sweet. Even, you know, neighborhoods around us, Royal Oak and
sure.
Pleasant Ridge and, you know, places like Ferndale, places like that. And you think, wow, these people aren't living in abject poverty. Well, for one thing, there's more problems in a lot of these places than you'd recognize. But it begins to fall off pretty quickly. And I lost my chart, but let me see if I can quickly find this. I was sort of astounded at these figures of how much people make. That the 50% of the people make from zero to 32,000.
Yeah.
So
that's surprising.
And a lot of you listening, 32,000, man, I'd love to get that. Well, given the amount of money in this country.
Given the amount of people.
Yeah, that's not a lot. And then when you get down to, there you have it, right here. Yeah. Whistle or something. Tell us the phone numbers. Just the phone numbers.
Well, yes, we do have a few open lines, but we are going to get back to the phones, Peter. 313-298-WRIF.
The bottom 50% of this country makes between zero and $32,395.
Mm-hmm.
The next 25%, it goes up from that 32,000 to 66,000. So that's 75% of the people make under $66,000. You get in the top 1% only by making $350,000 or so. And being in the entertainment industry, we know people that make that,
yeah,
right? And that's
sure.
What's them up in the top 1%. But the top 90%, it goes to $112,000. In other words, you make $112,000. That's the top of the 90th percentile. That's amazing. And then the rest, the multi-billions, and that 0.1%, who the people that really make all the decisions about life and death for the planet. Boom. Okay, you're right. Let's take some calls. Here's Mike in Birmingham. Mike, hi. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter? How you doing, Jolene?
What's
hi,
up?
Hi, Mike.
I watched the World Series, and I must say, I was glad to see Texas get their butt kicked by St. Louis.
Yeah, me too.
I
hate Texas. I hate everything about Texas. And you know what?
Except for Austin.
Except for Austin, yeah. That's a cool town. My neighbor is from St. Louis, and he is just over the moon about this. And I was doing the same thing with him. I'm like, you know it's not the Tigers, but I hate Texas. He's like, so do I.
Well, that's interesting. And
but we hate them for different reasons.
Well, what do you think about this, Mike? A lot of people were rooting for Texas because, you know, we're in the American League and, you know, we're against the National League. But I figured, on the other hand, these are the guys that bumped the Tigers.
But you know what the best part of the game was watching the look on George W.'s face as Texas lost.
Oh, okay. Changed my mind.
See?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There you go. That makes it all
better. Warm and fuzzy.
I got to say, I watched 0 minutes of the World Series.
Me too.
If Detroit would have been in it, would have been a different story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. We got open lines for you. Here is Tristan in Dearborn. Hi, Tristan. You're on the air.
Blessed Solomon, Peter and Jolene.
Hi.
Hello.
First of all, I want to comment real quick on the came from the Pope. I'm finally glad to hear that they are taking responsibility for what has happened. I'm a Wiccan practitioner. I've been studying it since I was 8 years old, and I'm finally glad to hear that a lot of the people during the Salem witch trials could pretty much find peace now. For the church owning up to it.
Well, you know, those people that the church had killed, and a lot of it was the Protestant churches here in the United States, although what they called, what was it called, the burning years? I can't remember where mostly it was in Europe was a tax on women, mainly. There were some men that were killed as well. But in many ways, it was this part of this hysteria that had been analyzed by feminist authors as saying it was this hysteria about the sexuality of women. And almost always the women that were attacked were women who did not have a man in their life, that lived...
Why are people so weird about women and their sex lives? throughout, they still are.
Yeah.
Get over it. Leave my you-know-what alone.
Real quick, if I could comment for the Occupy Detroit and everything that's going on in the other states and that.
Sure.
This was to quote a friend of mine. He said this, great spirits face violent opposition from mediocre minds.
Wow. All right. We'll take that one. Tristan, thanks for calling. By the way, just talking about all this reminds me, we didn't get to this. I said we were going to. Can a fertilized cell, a fertilized human egg, be a person?
Well, we don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, eventually.
But there's something called the personhood movement. And
what is, this is the...
This is in Mississippi.
Oh, go freaking figure.
Where there's a constitutional amendment that voters in Mississippi are going to vote on November 8th, and similar initiatives brewing in half a dozen other states, including Michigan, that would declare a fertilized human egg to be a legal person, effectively branding abortion. And you're saying, good. And
I mean, you're not talking to me.
No.
Those against it.
But also would declare some forms of birth control as murder. So they would declare abortion murder, and they would declare birth control.
Get out of my uterus!
Like IUDs and where
Plan
are...
B.
Yeah, what is... Oh, Plan B. Right. Tell people what that is.
That's the morning after pill.
Right. Those are the two things. And the Mississippi Amendment aims to sidestep existing legal battles, simply stating that the term person or person shall include every human being from the moment of fertilization, cloning, that's weird, or the functional equivalent thereof.
That is weird.
Yeah, right.
These people are, just get a life. Find some, get a hobby, and don't make my coochie your hobby.
Well, it is. And here's who put this together. In 2009, an ardent abortion foe named Les Riley. Gee, it's a guy. I would have.
Go figure, these guys.
Formed a state personhood group and started collecting signatures needed to reach the ballot. He was in Colorado. But it kept getting defeated by large margins, so he figured, let's kind of branch out. Maybe we can find some other state. Now, where could we go? Let's see. Could we go to Massachusetts? No.
How about
we
Alabama?
You're getting close. Mississippi! Both the Republican and the Democratic candidates for governor support this amendment that would declare a fertilized egg to be a person.
And then, therefore, murder charges.
If you could, yeah. Abortion in the past, when it has been illegal, it made the practitioner guilty of a crime that was never a capital crime, that's for sure. So I guess what you could do is you could name your fertilized egg. Your fertilized egg could own property. Fertilized egg could, I mean, this is reaching into new territory for law.
And for lunacy.
Yeah. What do you think, folks? We're going to talk about that and more about, and what do you think about the Pope's call for a central world bank, global authority?
Ooh.
We knew he was, never mind. One of the things he wanted to do, and this is really important, he's called for a transaction tax, which would mean that every time the banksters had one of their little, non-understandable financial transactions, there'd be a small little tax. And since they do billions of them a day, that would provide a lot of the funding for what, the safety nets for what we need. So more on that when we come back.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Trojan Man!
Attention, pleasure seekers. Trojan Bearskin Condoms are bringing couples closer than ever before. At an amazing 40% thinner than our standard condoms, couples are literally singing their praises.
Irresistible closeness. Yeah. We're in passionate harmony.
Wow.
Together as one, more connected than ever before.
Now that's pretty close.
Trojan Bearskin Condoms with triple tested quality. Trojan, America's number one most trusted condom brand.
Can't wait to get it on.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlowers send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever, and the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julian Jordan.
Thank you, and welcome to our second hour. In about an hour, we're going to be running an interview.
Yeah,
that I recorded earlier in the week. The one I think applies to much of what we've been talking about with Jeffrey Winters. He's the author of a brand new book called Oligarchy. Oligarchy means the rule of a few. In other words, the 1%. We're the 99%. 1% is in control. We got to stop that. And let's see. Who did this? Well, I think I'd be saying his name, so I'm not going to... I won't say it, but he wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and sent an article from journalstar.com. I can't even tell what city this, Lincoln City Council. A number of places that the local officials wanted to clear Occupy sites.
Yeah.
Like in Nashville, I think.
Well, they are. Nashville did it. Chicago did it.
And in somewhere, another liberal, so-called, governor of New York ordered, I think it was in Albany, ordered the protesters cleared away, and a magistrate said, no, they can stay there. There is a constitution saying you have the right to redress grievances. And, no one has really come up with this. I'm curious.
And Detroit, you should be really happy and really proud because they're being really cool to us here in Detroit.
Yeah.
Really cool.
And they're not.
Ferndale, Occupy Ferndale. The cops were, just kind of parked making sure because they had heard about it. And I don't think they had to do anything because I was there. It was a very peaceful, wonderful event. Now that there's no spending the night in Occupy Detroit, it was more of a rally and a protest. But they were there, and it was cool, man.
All right, so comments on that. And by the way, as I said at the beginning of the show, conservatives that are trying to delegitimize the Occupy movement are living up to their name. They're trying to conserve power relationships, wealth relationships as they currently exist.
Yeah, and they want to cut all of those police officers' pay and not allow them to, have all those union goodies.
Yeah, and maybe what they should do with those police forces is not allocate any money for flash grenades and, rubber bullets and stuff like that. Back in this country, I think we might have mentioned this last week, they're getting better because in 1932, when there was 17,000 World War I veterans and about almost 30,000 members of their family, they made a camp out in Washington, D.C.
Tell me what they were called again.
The Bonus Army.
Bonus Army. Why can I never remember that? That was amazing. Look it up. Google it.
Yeah, Bonus Army. The story is absolutely incredible. The World War I veterans were supposed to get a bonus in 1945. But there was so much unemployment by 1932, and this is when Hoover was still president, that they went there and the movement was, we want our bonus now. And they said, look, we're broke, we don't have jobs, we don't have any food, our families are starving, and if we'll get this money, it'll also pump it into the economy.
Yeah.
The United States government under President Hoover said, called out the army, said, break this up. 45,000 people are encamped there in tents and everything. And just like we saw now, they sent in two tanks and armed cavalry, killed two of the protesters, broke up the camp, burned it to the ground, led by General Douglas MacArthur, Dwight David Eisenhower, and George Patton.
Yeah,
like that. And again, they were following orders.
I just happened upon a documentary about that one time, and I was sucked in and just fascinated by this story.
Yeah. The other thing I brought up, too, was this constitutional amendment that is facing voters in Mississippi next week or so, or the week after, that would declare a fertilized human egg to be a legal person, effectively branding abortion and some forms of birth control as murder.
Yeah.
But here, you know, this the head of it, Brad Pruitt, executive director of Yes on 26, that's the name of the amendment, the proposition, he said, I view it as transformative. Personhood is bigger than just shutting abortion clinic. It's an opportunity for people to say that we're made in the image of God. You know what, buddy? I think you just screwed yourself.
Yeah, you done screwed yourself, buddy, down there in Mississippi, because you know what? Not all of us believe in God.
And there's the First Amendment.
And there's a little thing called the First Amendment.
That says Congress shall establish no religion. And this guy is just saying this was the, pardon me, the motivation for it. And this would bar some birth control methods, including IUDs, morning after pills, which prevent fertilized eggs from implanting in the uterus. So your thought on that as well. Liz has an idea about it. She's in Memphis, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just think it's a double-edged sword with what these candidates from Mississippi are thinking. Over 80% of their court cases are meth-related. I think they should attack their meth problem.
Is that right?
They're going to have meth babies. I don't know. You know, I guess if they're looking for better evidence, maybe they should get signatures from these embryos. I don't know.
Yes, I mean, come on.
But then, of course, if they're on meth, they might be able to do that. I don't know.
Hey, Liz.
She's thought it out.
Do you do stand-up on the weekends or anything?
No. I'm a cleaning lady.
You do now.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do it.
Yeah, I'm clean, too.
You're a cleaning lady. Well,
we could use you on all of those accounts.
An honorable profession.
The
I always say.
Is usually the messiest of them all. It's looking pretty good tonight.
I always say, Liz, what would you rather get rid of, lawyers or the cleaning crew?
Definitely the thing.
Yeah, so you are a definite benefit to society.
You. Everyone.
All right, Liz, thanks for calling. Let's see. Here is Brian in Harrison. Go ahead. You're on the air. Did I do anything right? Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Brian,
are you here? Boy, I don't even
hear. Man, that's dead silence.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Check that out, guys, and we'll see what's what with that. Here is Larry in Mount Clemens. Hey, Larry, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm on the air.
Yeah.
I think it's up to the woman if she wants to have an abortion or a baby. I don't think the government should be involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love hearing a man say that.
Don't you think it's odd, Larry, though, that these conservatives are always talking about getting the government off my back, and now they're always the ones that
get up a woman's, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it starts with the religious. You know, they want to get involved. They want to do this. They want to do that. But I think it's up to a woman if she wants to have a baby or abortion. Nobody else.
Well,
the couple should decide these things. Yeah.
Here's a couple ways that we could severely reduce the amount of abortions that take place in the United States. All right, hey, anti-abortion people, what did I used to call them? Compulsory pregnancy people.
Right.
You're going to have a baby whether you want to or not.
It's funny, we don't talk about this thing. We'll go for stretches and not talk about it, and bam, some idiot comes in and we have to.
Here's the main thing, and it's tied into the Occupy movement. As long as you have great amounts of poverty in this society, poorer people aren't going to be going to say, look, we cannot afford to have another child.
Yeah.
The majority of abortions are done by women who are married. Not you people say, well, she got herself into it at the club after,
that little,
you know,
hoe bag.
Yeah. Which isn't the case. So you eliminate poverty. You make this a more equitable society. The other thing is, you don't want a lot of more babies and you don't want abortions. Let's have free birth control available to everybody.
Because guess what? People are going to have sex.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's natural.
What do you think about those as two solutions, Larry? Larry, gone. Okay.
Well, there's gone.
I didn't go.
We got lost in our own little world here.
All right. What's new? I can't even see half of the things up here on the screen, but hi, you're on the air from Harrison.
Yeah.
Who's this again, Larry? No.
No, this is Brian.
Brian from Harrison, yeah.
Right, right, yeah. I grew up in Livonia, man. Grew up on WRAF. Everything rocks.
Everything.
Anyway,
anything
yeah,
rocks.
This thing
everything.
Everything,
cold,
yeah.
You know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No.
We're
getting punchy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
Anyways, I mean, I like I said earlier, years ago, Michael Jackson made enough damn money to... You know, feed the poor.
To save the feed the poor,
right,
house
right.
the homeless.
Yeah.
Right, right. And then, you know, you got Saudi Arabia. Look how many oil, greedy oil people, you know, it's sickening when you really think about it and research it. It's just like there's so many people around this world that make this ridiculous amount of money, spend it on extravagant vacations and vacation homes and cruises and boats and yachts, and it's like it makes you sick, really.
Yeah, and $500 hamburgers.
Hey, I'm not a real religious person,
right.
But you know, the Pope is on to something. I mean,
yeah,
for once, it's
like it's time to either you know, get together or just crap can it all together.
Well, I'm glad you chose a word other than
yes,
what you intended.
Yes, we didn't have to press the magic button.
That's good. I had to mute myself there for a moment, but
that's all right.
Yeah, it's sickening.
Well,
I mean, even look at Donald Trump. Even.
I'm at a loss for words when you say that name.
But you know, you get what I'm saying.
I do.
It's sickening.
The wrong people have money, for one thing. I know what you're saying, and I think that we have to begin let me go at it another way. The Pope talked about an ethic of solidarity, and that's what human beings were originally made of. That's why the species survived, is because there was this ethic of solidarity, and now it's eroded and frayed to it's almost nothing. So the fact that these 1.5 million people that are worth $14 trillion can enjoy all the things that you just mentioned, Brian, and know that 100 miles away, 50 miles away, a mile away, there's mm-hmm. people sleeping in the streets is so far beyond me. All right,
and
thank you very much.
So many people.
Yeah. We were at a big WRIF dinner years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say who this was, but you may recognize the voice.
Okay.
And so after dinner, and the stations sometimes do these trade-outs. So we were at a very fancy restaurant having a WRIF dinner. In fact, a lot of the people here felt kind of out of their element.
What are we doing here? Because
yeah.
we are DJs and we wear T-shirts and jeans.
Yeah. And, in fact, I'll tell you, it was at the, I can't think of the name of the place, right at the corner of Woodward and West Canfield, that old mansion.
Oh, the Whitney?
The Whitney, yeah.
Cool.
The Whitney. And so this one prominent WRF DJ who's no longer
on the air
ordered a glass of port that cost $40 for a shot.
Of course.
So I said,
he or she did.
I said, you know, I'm going to give it away. I said, you know, blank, about half a block from here, there's people, it was cold, you know,
oh,
it was Christmas
dinner.
I said, about half a block from here, there's people sleeping in doorways. And he said, I'll drink to that.
Oh, God. That's so terrible. That is so terrible, but, you know.
I won't say who it is.
Yeah, we know who it is.
All right. Well, I guess there's not
a
lot.
We still love him.
Yes,
her,
we do.
Or her.
There's not a lot of comment on this thing about how voters in Mississippi are being asked to approve a proposition that would declare a fertilized human egg to be a legal person, effectively making abortion and some forms of birth control, like IUDs and the morning after pill, to be murder. So here's where this all falls down. Dr. Randall S. Hines, a fertility specialist in Jackson, Mississippi, working against Proposition 26 with the group Mississippians for Healthy Families, said that the amendment reflects biological ignorance. Well, I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
He said, most fertilized eggs do not implant in the uterus or develop further. Well, he says, once you recognize that the majority of fertilized eggs don't become people, then you recognize how absurd this amendment is. And he said he fears severe unintended consequences for doctors and women dealing with ectopic. Do you know what that is?
Ectopic pregnancies. And that's where it's it gets stuck in the fallopian tubes.
Or other dangerous pregnancies and for in vitro fertility treatments. We'll be asking the legislator, the government, judges to decide what is best for the patient. So, yeah, out of women's uteruses, but out of the health care as well. And you want a society that doesn't have abortions? Create the context, the social and economic context where every child is wanted. And when people are having sex, are you ready for this? That some people do this?
Ooh.
They have it for pleasure.
Ooh, what they do?
For love.
Oh, my gosh.
And sometimes for just down and dirty lust.
Here's the lust.
Yeah. And if you gave everyone access to free birth control, if you had an equitable society economically and socially and education, and guess what? You could probably eliminate about 80% of all abortions.
Right? Hey, yeah, I agree. Dave from Boulder, Colorado is listening on his BlackBerry. He's driving across Kansas. He said he may call. And I say, Dave, 313-298-9743. We love our people, our Detroiters and our Michiganders, yeah. But we love when we get people from out of state and around the world calling as well. So thank you for listening.
And also, here's another thing, and this has some interesting aspects of it. You know these right-wing crazies who say that there isn't global warming? Well, let me take that back. There's a couple of things. Climate change. Even well, some people, you know, they say, whoa, look, it's cold now.
Yeah, well, where's global warming?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about when it's like a degree and a half will do incredible damage. But the whole question of whether or not it is human created. You know, this is, for some reason or other, these conservatives are way off on this. But how about this?
For some reason or another?
Yeah.
Okay.
A prominent physicist and skeptic of global warming spent 2 years trying to find out if mainstream climate scientists were wrong. Now, you remember that the vast majority of climatologists, physicists, all that, all say that, that not only is there global warming, climate change, but it's being caused by human activity. In the end, though, he determined they were correct. Temperatures really are rising rapidly. The study, The World Surface Temperatures by Richard Mueller, was partially bankrolled by a foundation connected to global warming deniers. Now, this is interesting because he was set off, and wait till you find out, for those of you who know about this stuff, who was behind this all, that you would think, well, wait a minute, these climate deniers paid this guy to check out whether he thought it was real or not. And it's the old saying about he who pays the piper calls the tune, right? Mm-hmm. So the study of the world's surface temperatures by Mueller was partly bankrolled by these foundation connected to global warming deniers. He pursued long-held theories in analyzing the data. And yet he found that the land is 1.6 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than in the 1950s. And again, if you think, well, that's what could that do? It does plenty.
Yeah. I mean, if you know anything about it at all, and if that doesn't sound like enough, well, then you just don't really know.
Yeah. He said he went back even further, studying readings from Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. His ultimate finding of a warming world to be presented at a conference Monday is no different from what mainstream climate scientists.
Climatologists?
You want to end the show early?
No, the great news is we have a bunch of phone calls, okay, so they can help you out.
But let me just get to that. One quarter of the $600,000 to do his research came from the Charles Koch Foundation, K-O-C-H. This is the Koch brothers. This is who is financing the teabaggers. Remember them? Remember when everybody was all upset about the teabagger?
Yeah.
How about this one? Sarah Palin.
Upset. Remember her? Upset or laughing at them. I mean, it was also kind of hilarious.
Well, the Koch brothers, Charles and David, run a large privately held company involved in oil and other industries producing sizable greenhouse gas emissions. So these guys are multi-billionaires. They're among the top 10 richest men in America, and they do whatever they can to finance the Republican Party and their stooges in groups like the Tea Party that will be, they're essentially cannon fodder, so they don't have to control the emissions that their energy companies put out. And so they can make more money. I mean, they got more money than God.
Yeah.
But there's no guns, so there's no money. But they got more. They got more money.
They have more money than anyone.
Yeah.
Except for the guy in Mexico.
Senor Slim.
Senor Slim, the richest guy in the world.
It looks like Slim.
He does, like Slim Whitman?
Well, no, I don't mean he looks like Slim. His name is S-L-I-M.
Oh, okay.
But with, maybe they do call him Slim, I don't know. But anyway, let's grab some of these calls here. This is Willie. Willie's in Farmington Hills. Hey, Willie, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Just a quick comment about the whether or not abortion should be legal or not.
Yeah.
I was watching TV one day and Herman Cain was being interviewed.
Oh, yeah.
We call him Coke Cain.
Coke Cain has had a little bit of a problem with this abortion issue, right?
And it kind of pissed me off because this guy didn't have a clue. And the way he answered the question, it was like he was both for and against abortion.
Initially.
A perfect politician.
Yeah, really. Just on both sides, talking out of both sides of his mouth.
And when you think about it, it's like, let's say if it does become illegal, how do you police it? Okay, IUDs would be illegal, Plan B would be illegal, birth control pills. And let's say if you have a miscarriage, okay, then that's like grounds for legal investigation. It's like these guys don't even think about, their decision making in depth. It's like within the last 10 years, the sophistication level of the type of candidates that we get that want to, run for presidency has changed.
Yeah. Well, abortion is only legal in three countries in the entire Western Hemisphere: Canada, the United States, and Cuba. And yet, women have abortions in every single one of those countries, as they used to have abortions in this country before the 1972, 3, 4? Roe v. Wade case. A lot of it was self-induced, which meant that women poisoned themselves, injured themselves, trying to, needles.
They died.
So, yeah. But it didn't stop it. The other thing was, of course, in poorer countries and among poorer people, it just meant more kids in the family that they weren't able to raise in a manner that they themselves realized was not going to be adequate. And, then the other option was, they had, what do these call them, abortion butchers. Just doctors would do things in back alleys, as they called it. Or the upper class could always pay a doctor to say that the woman's health was at risk and pay, a huge fee, and then they would get it. So the abortion was, and safe, clean abortion was always available to the rich in this country. That's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
No wealthy person ever died from an abortion.
All right, Willie, thank you very much. Appreciate your calls. And I was trying to, I can't seem to write on my screen, but Sarah or Athena, if you can hear me, is there anyone on line one? Let me know about that. I was reading earlier that the Pope had called for a central world bank global authority, a global public authority and a central world bank to rule over financial institutions that he said had become outdated and, as he put it, often ineffective in dealing fairly with crises. What he was trying to say was essentially what all the rest of us are saying, is that this 1% controls us. He talked about the idolatry of the market and called for an ethic of solidarity. And let's see if we can get a comment from Tony's in Chesterfield. Tony, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going good.
Hi,
thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on what the Pope had said. It was very surprising to me because that statement, I think it has more importance than most of us realize, because I'm a younger guy, I'm 22 years old, and most of the people around me are politically ignorant, and, they're very religious, which is whatever, that's their choice. But this what the Pope had said was very strong, because a lot of people will not listen to their government, will not pay attention to any politics, but if the Pope says something, they're going to listen with wide open ears. So I think it's really great that he came out and said that. You know, his talk about the World Bank and all that, you know, that's maybe pushing it. But basically his message was a very strong message that'll get through to a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't hear it.
I agree with you. You know, Tony, when you say, and I understand this, the kind of political apathy that people have, the passivity, because heretofore, it's been pretty much felt that the game is fixed, that the, you know, the fix is in, the game is rigged, and so people almost turn away from it because of that.
They completely do.
Yeah, and but the question, and I think unsaid in what you were indicating, is that to not do this, well, let me see if I can use an analogy, which I don't even know why I really have to do, but it would be like if you told somebody, hey, I just heard these people were planning to break into your house and steal everything you have. And that person said, oh, I don't care, man. I'm going to watch the game, or I'm going to go to the club, or something like that. Nothing wrong with watching the game. Certainly nothing wrong with going to the club.
Right.
But right now, we're at a tipping point of which way it's going to go. We're either going to continue on this race to the bottom, where we are going to be I shouldn't say we. I don't know if I'm going to be in that or not. But two-thirds of the people in this country are going to be in a peasantry.
Too many people.
And the cities are going to be like Kingston. When we
Jamaica.
Talk, when we talk about, not Ontario. That when we talk about a world of slums, a lot of those are going to be here in this country. And to not pay heed to that, to not understand that all of our futures, whether you're 14 or 44 or 84, and that we may have like one last chance before everything really goes down, what did Larry say? The crapper, right.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's quite a shame that it's taken this amount of time for everyone to realize that something needs to be done.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed. Yeah, I'm just glad it's happening with this 99%, 1%, which I was talking to our friend, singer-songwriter David Rovix the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And the exciting part about it, mostly, that it's black and white. There's so much gray out there, and this is pretty black and white, the 99 and the 1.
Yeah.
Hey.
And I guess to do nothing right now. Well, let me put it another way. For people that don't like the Occupy movement or don't like the message or whatever, I would always post to them, then what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Let's talk. You know, the Pope was talking against selfishness, which I think is good because he's mostly aiming that at the 1%. But on a personal level, what are you going to do? And I'm not addressing this to you, Tony. I'm addressing it to all of us. I'll do the plural. What are we going to do to protect our future, to protect our planet from the kind of pollution-destroying technology that these Koch brothers, K-O-C-H, check, if you don't know who they are, check and just Google them. What are you going to do to protect you and your family against asthma and cancer and all of it that comes from these fossil fuel industry?
Yeah.
What are you going to do to make sure that you don't live a whole life of precarious labor? That is to say, rather than having a sense that you will work, you will provide something for your community, and in return you will get a sense of security for yourself and your family. That's all up for grabs. That all may be gone unless you do something. And we have a moment in which this is all open, where what William Burroughs called naked lunch, we see exactly what's at the end of every fork. And there's no denying what this is all about. All right, Tony, thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You guys are awesome.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
Tony.
You. Boy, that was a weird analogy, using naked lunch. You ever read that?
I did a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
out there.
Out there. Here's Gino. Gino, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
We're good.
I wanted to ask you about nanotechnology.
I don't know her. Man who? No, I'm only kidding.
Nanotechnology.
You got the wrong vampire, darling. What are you talking about, nanotechnology?
Well, I'm talking about changing what we can do. I listened to what the heck you had to say there, but I'm talking about saving possibly just the medicine alone and Dr. O over there in Chicago, nanotechnology.
What? Can you explain what you mean? By nanotechnology?
Can you imagine one billionth of a nanometer? I mean, a millimeter?
No. Okay. I mean, that's pretty small. No, I can't. Yeah, you're right.
That's pretty small.
Yeah.
But I can do it. I can manufacture it in the United States.
Wow. Are you a scientist?
No, you're an entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. That's good.
So what I have to offer to you is Kool-X.
Kool-X. As long as it's not Kool-Aid.
We're not drinking the Kool-Aid.
You guys can laugh.
No, we're not laughing at you.
No,
believe
me. We're just having fun amongst ourselves.
Ourselves, yeah, because we're getting a little...
Yeah, because I've been listening to you guys. Let me plug my phone in.
Let's wait.
Hold on, Peter. Wait a minute. We've got to...
That's the one of my men, so please.
Okay.
Yeah,
no problem.
Take your time.
Take your time. You know, whatever. We'll just maybe... None of us will talk.
We'll just...
So wait a minute. What do you got for us? That's good. I mean,
I got nanotechnology.
All right,
that's right. Great.
I got nanometers.
Rock on with it, man.
Nanocarbon technology.
You know they have that whole thing in November, that writing contest.
Yeah,
have you heard about that, Peter? Where you write a novel. I mean, you write a novel in 1 month in November, and it's something called the Nano something. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, you could go. Here's how about a name for your company, Geno Nano.
Hey, look it.
Just
look up Halimar and David Leith.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And then look up Jim English.
Yeah.
Okay. What else you got? Who else?
And that's it.
All right.
Okay, that's good.
We're on it. Thank you. Geno Nano, thank you. Appreciate it.
Geno Nano.
Yeah. Here's Martin in Detroit. Martin, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you, Pete. The Pope's recent statements are really consistent with what he wrote to the church in a letter to the church he called Charity and Truth. And the reason why I bothered to pick it up from the Catholic bookstore is because the people on Wall Street were upset with it. And in it...
Oh, that's good.
Yes. He said that... The UN needs to get some teeth, basically what he said.
Some cojones.
The UN organization needs to be reformed so that the concept of the family of nations can acquire real teeth.
Well, that's a good idea. I mean, and although certainly the church's actions and in other regard have never met up in... as well as a lot of their rhetoric, they go back into the 1880s with statements about social justice. And
what's up with the feedback?
I don't know. We are getting some feedback, and I can't tell why. Is that gone now? Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is not inconsistent with longstanding church policy.
Did you turn your headphones back up?
And what it does, Pete, it removes the moral support that these bad guys think they've got from the church.
Yeah, well, certainly the church was on jihad against liberals within the Catholic Church, right? I mean...
By the same guy, by the way.
You're the same guy? What?
He said by the same guy.
Oh, by the same guy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, indeed. All right, Martin, thank you. Listen, we're going to be right back, and I want to tell you about another just absolutely, I don't know. It's not cheery news, but it's another vision of the future. It ain't good.
And you know what else?
Join us on
Facebook. I'm going to post something that one of our listeners, and I can't remember his name, sent us with images of Occupy Denver and the RoboCops going after the crowd.
Okay. That'll be, and you just go to facebook.com/nightcall. And I'm always saying we want friends, but I finally figured it out. You can just click like.
Yeah.
And then you're on board.
People on Facebook know this.
But they do.
It's okay.
Oh, but people, well, some people didn't.
Kidding.
People have been writing.
I just like to give you a hard time.
Yeah. By the way, we'll have a podcast up. We've been working hard to get rid of some of the glitches, and that'll be up at noon today. And by the way, I guess the seven billionth baby has been born.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, okay. Well, actually, we'll talk a little about that when we get back as well.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, listen to this. You may be eligible to receive tax-free income and eliminate your mortgage payments. It's all through a government-insured program called a reverse mortgage. And now you can get a free guide that tells you how. It's offered by One Reverse Mortgage, and it's yours free by calling 1-888-400-0901. The federal government created reverse mortgages specifically to make your retirement easier. They can help you stay in your home and turn your home's equity into tax-free income. You'll never make another mortgage payment. Find out more about this government program and get your free guide. Pick up the phone right now and call 1-888-400-0901. Find out why millions of Americans are considering reverse mortgages. There's no obligation. Equal housing lender not available in all states. Call now. 1-888-400-0901. That's 1-888-400-0901.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-644-1383. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-644-1383. That's 1-800-644-1383.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment. If you want to get in on it,
the
only way to do
it,
313-298-WRIF. If you go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, you'll see that tonight's guest at 1 a.m. is Jeffrey Winters. He's written a book called Oligarchy, and it discusses the impact on democracy of this concentrated wealth, 1%. And also, here I am, palling around with Bill Ayers again.
You are?
Yeah.
Remember
that guy? Old Bill
palling
Ayers.
Palling around with a terrorist.
But he's talking about education. Well, we were hoping.
I know. He's so, you know, over the top, right?
Yeah. Well, he's a professor of education. Yeah.
Love that guy.
But there's all the stuff about Occupy Detroit is on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. And there's the Occupy Detroit website link. There's the Occupy Detroit Facebook. UAW endorses Occupy Wall Street. And then a whole thing about the November 2nd general strike in Oakland, California, because of the attack on that Iraq veteran by the Oakland police. And I guess...
Where they fractured his skull.
He is out of critical condition.
Yeah.
And looks like he will live. Also, the Oakland police, a link to that, violated a 2004 agreement limiting use of militarized weapons to disperse crowds. Now, what in the hell is going on? Why are the police issued weapons like that to use against police? I suppose...
Protesters.
Against protesters, yeah. I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, I'm all right. Am I going to make it?
You always do.
I always do. I suppose that there could be a contingency plan where somehow you had like the Zetas in Mexico that are also armed with automatic weapons and body armor and all that. Maybe, you know, you might want to have it for them. But you don't need RoboCop armor and weaponry, flash grenades,
rubber bullets
and all that.
You know, I mean, we've been...
Well, they can't hurt. They're made of rubber.
They hurt like a you-know-what. I mean, and I know because a friend of mine was shot in the knee with one.
Yeah, they've got some photographs online.
He was a combat photographer at one time. It wasn't at a protest. He was overseas. And,
wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so... great violation of our constitutional rights being carried out by the state governments, the local governments trying to stop these Occupy movements. and forcing the police to be the instruments of repression. Some of them doing it with great glee, I must say. Some of the police, but not the majority of them. I'm sure most of them are thinking, what in the hell am I doing here? Because with the cutbacks that are going on, they're going to be cutting back on police jobs as well.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah. And pay and everything that goes with it.
Okay. So a lot of stuff on my site. You might want to check it out. Oh, Scott Olson. Yeah, that's the veteran, the Iraq veteran who was shot by the police. Okay, here is here's Mark in Shelby Township. Hey, Mark, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Hi, Mark. What's going on?
Not much. I am frustrated.
Why?
About?
That's because they've been taking away food stamps from a lot of people, and they shouldn't be doing that.
Really?
Are
they cutting back on that,
too? I haven't heard that yet.
They decided to cancel it all out because, I don't know if they wanted to re-enlist money somewhere else, but...
You know, Mark, you sure about this? I haven't heard that this is the case. I mean, they haven't. I mean, for one thing, the food stamp program is a federal program, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But I guess the governor decided to sign a little waiver that says that they're going to take it all away because they can't afford it.
Huh. Well,
we'll have to look into that.
Yeah, well, we'll look into it because, I mean, the idea of the effect.
I know that they want to, you know, shorten unemployment benefits, take some unemployment benefits away, things like that.
And contract the number of years you can be on welfare and all.
Yes.
And the other thing is that when you're trying, people say, food stamps, those lazy loafers getting, well, the majority of people getting food stamps, well, actually, I don't know the figure. A great proportion of the people getting food stamps are children.
Yes.
So no matter what you're, and I don't mean you, Mark, but no matter what one's opinion is of the adult in the household is, and somebody, a lot of people have an uncharitable view of them, to say the least.
Yes, they do.
You know, we got kids here. But we'll check that out.
Yeah, and I think that is such a great point, Peter, that, you know, people really need to consider what their statements, you know, ultimately how. Who it affects.
Yeah. Well, you know, these people are doing the cutbacks. They couldn't care less.
No.
Well, here's what I was talking about, this vision of the future, which is not very positive. And that Walmart is cutting health care benefits. I mean, they already pay. Here's this incredibly wealthy corporation, largest single employer in the world, mm-hmm. I think.
And for the country.
Yeah. And I got to say, they got some problems. All five of the Waltonaires, so these aren't people that earn their money. It was simply given to them by Sam. That was Sam's. They're in Sam's Club, right?
Yeah.
All five of the heirs, pardon me, were in the top 10 billionaires. And the family together, the Walton family together has, maybe we talked about this
last week. We did talk about it last week.
And the cutbacks in the medical care?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I won't go through it again. I just, I'm still just stunned that they would take these people and like mean that they would have to pay $3,325 a year from, for instance, a woman who makes $12,000 a year.
I won't even...
These heartless son of a bitches.
I won't even look at the store when I drive by.
Yeah.
I don't even know where there is one. That's how much I hate that place.
Have I told you tonight how much I hate these people?
I hate them, too.
To quote Mike Malloy. Here's Scott in Westland. Scott, hi, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting so patiently.
Yes, well, actually, I was going to say that I wanted to mention two things and talk about the third, but I have to mention four now because I don't even want to get into this, but you missed the boat. Cash assistance is ending for several thousand people.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Cash assistance.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, but I'm not going to even talk about that, but that's been a huge story in the mainstream media.
No, we knew that. I mean, he was talking about food stamps.
We didn't know that.
Oh, okay. All right, so the next thing is this is just a joke. Herman Cain, the black Tom Monahan.
Yeah.
How about a vice presidential candidate for Herman Cain, Tom Monahan? Pizza, get it? Okay. And then finally,
Monahan and Herman run together.
Yeah.
God.
Okay. Detroit smart bus cutbacks. Somebody else talk about that. But this is actually the urgent thing I want to talk about is the Kevorkian Auto Insurance Act that the Republican legislatures in the Michigan legislature are trying to put through. They've decided that one of the sanest parts of Michigan law, the No-Fault Insurance Act, is something that needs to be fixed. You know, as they say, don't broke, it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've decided that the idea that basically almost anybody who has basic no-fault auto insurance in Michigan has basically an almost unlimited medical benefit in the case that they become permanently disabled, like a quadriplegic from an auto accident, which is quite possible and happens all the time.
Okay.
So I call it the Kevorkian Auto Insurance Act because it means to save money, they think to save money, that people could opt for, say, a lifetime limit of, say, $500,000 in medical coverage for injuries due to an auto accident. So, again, when that $500,000 runs out, you'll wish you had Dr. Kevorkian at your side.
There you go. All right.
Scott's on a roll tonight. Thanks for calling, Scott.
All right. Yeah, indeed. A few open lines, 313-298-WRIF. I just went to the Occupy Detroit website. It's occupy-detroit.us.
There's also just occupydetroit.com. Do you know that?
Try it.
Okay.
Okay. And the kind of, starting at the beginning of the show, that what it's all about is not confrontations with the police, which are not happening at all in Detroit. The Detroit police are very cooperative with the encampment down at Grand Circus Park, where everyone is welcome to come visit. Although, as I said, there's not a tremendous amount going on a daily basis. But they've got even what they call little neighborhoods of tents. And So,
Peter, this is the one. This is the main one. And it is quite an impressive website, as a matter of fact. And this is where you can donate as well.
What does the homepage look like? What is it that's
OccupyDetroit.com. It's a big red bar across it. It says Occupy Detroit, Detroit, Michigan, Occupy Movement Resources.
Huh. I'm looking at one with a little
girl. Go with the other one.
Okay, I will. But in any event,
believe me,
I said it's not about occupying public space, although that's an element. It's not about the police repression of citizens' right to assemble for redress of grievances. It's not about individuals who may or may not express strange opinions when they're garnered by Fox News. But it's about examining the power of wealth and how it dominates our society. And when it makes catastrophic mistakes like it has over the last few years, they wind up richer, we pay the cost. So, for instance, there's a march on DTE on Tuesday, November 1st, called Stop the Shutoffs. I don't know if you know that, but thousands and thousands of Detroiters are having their utilities. And you say, well, they can't pay. Well, they can't pay because they've been screwed under this system where the 1% grab all the wealth.
Well,
right?
Then there's Highland Park, where they are shutting off streetlights, removing the streetlights, and these people are terrified. I mean, it's already some pretty scary areas in Highland Park. Then they have no light. They feel even less safe. It's awful.
Well, there's going to be.
And Peter, I'm sorry. I take it back. You were right about that.
What's one? What are you looking at?
This is a whole different thing, but it is occupy-detroit.com.
Right. And let's see. Oh, you're going to this, the craft and knitting circle?
I'm not going to it because I'm not crafty and I don't knit, but I love that they invited me. And I love that they have one.
On November 4th, Friday, at the old Highland Park Ford plant, where it all began. That's where old Henry began his auto production back in, 100 years ago or so or more. They're a rally for green jobs. So this is the kind of events that wealth is being confronted by saying, we are not going to allow you to determine our future. And that's the contest, folks. It's either the 1% that's going to decide it all, as they have been doing, or it's the 99%. And they've got all, the old song in the Doors? They've got the guns, but we've got the numbers, right?
Yeah, that's and right, we do.
We're taking over.
Well,
that's the line.
Oh, it is.
In the Doors song, yeah. We ought to be playing all that music. Let's do it.
Okay, Peter, right.
Here's Joe in Westland. Hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're doing good. Thanks for calling.
Doing great, thanks.
I think that we should get more and more pissed off, and we should revolt is what I think we should do.
Well, this is a good start, I'd say, all the occupations.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah. We should have a lot of marches like we did in the 60s, too.
Well, they're happening.
And it made a difference then,
yeah.
Didn't it?
And,
yes, sure did.
Because, you know, they get the people in power. They get scared. And, you know what's a good example? And we want more than this, Joe. But in Saudi Arabia, when there was the Arab Spring and all these dictators were being overthrown, not by NATO the way Gaddafi was, but by the people themselves in Tunisia and in Egypt and attempted in Bahrain, that the Saudi rulers, these are this absolute, this absolute monarchy that you and I are financing and arming with our tax dollars,
yeah.
And they don't let women drive, and they cut people's hands off, and they flog them and all this.
Yeah,
they said, whoa, okay, there's some revolts. We better give people each, I forgot what it was, 10 grand or something
yeah.
like that.
But they said women can vote in the next election.
But the elections don't mean anything.
It might be for 50 years. But
yeah, and they can't drive. They can't drive to the polls.
They can't get there, yeah.
But the point being, if we scare them, they will... say, okay, well, we'll give up a little of our money, or we'll create some jobs, or
and
we'll...
have a little buffer, like a Band-Aid, right?
Yeah. So,
I think.
That what? I'm sorry,
still
what?
Still vote.
One more time.
We should still vote.
Oh,
we should still vote.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm voting.
I mean, even if it turns out to be the lesser of the two evils, I'd rather have the lesser of the two evils than the greater of the two evils.
If that's all we've got, I hate to say, I mean, while we continue to fight for what we deserve.
Because you don't want conservatives in there, because by the very nature of their name, as I've been saying all day, they want to conserve everything as it is.
Well, they're rotten even when we have Democrats in office.
Yeah. Well,
there is just rotten.
But think about that. Every time you hear the word conservative... you are talking about people that want to conserve everything as it is. And these are the, for instance, a lot of people that see unions as being irrelevant today, certainly during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, when, you get Detroiters will be saying, my dad or my grandfather or whoever was in the unions, and they provided the basis for a middle-class living for our family, and I got to go to college and all of that. Conservatives completely opposed the union movement, did everything possible. And the most extreme conservatives, of course, were in vigilante groups that even killed union organizers. All right, Joe, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is Larry. Larry's in Mount Clements. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
It's me, Larry.
Larry, is it Larry? Is this you?
You know that the tabs are going up $40 next year, license tabs. It's in the Macomb Daily paper.
It is.
Oh, my God. Really?
I thought it was even more than that. Or was I looking at the total cost? This is another Governor Snyder.
$40 next year. And it's going to create $1 billion to repair the roads and bridges and highways and all that.
So you would say, well, that's pretty good. If we're going to drive on them, maybe we ought to have them in good shape. But this, again, is what they call a regressive tax. So what that means is that everybody pays it. So the guy that's being driven in a Lincoln Town Car pays an extra $40. And, that's couldn't care less. That's what he pays for lunch, right? And yet somebody who's working at Walmart and just had their medical cost raised like thousands of dollars a year.
That
another
extra $40 is hard to come by.
That's hurtful, huh? Well, Larry from Mount Clements, I want to thank you for calling in.
Yeah,
appreciate
Peter,
it. Please call us again.
Someone just sent in an article from Politico, and here is the headline. Exclusive! Two women accused Herman Cain of inappropriate behavior. During Herman Cain's tenure as the head of the National Restaurant Association in the 1990s, at least two female employees complained to colleagues and senior association officials about inappropriate behavior. They complained of sexually suggestive behavior that made them angry and uncomfortable. They got financial payouts. And now he was on some kind of a show earlier today, and he said, I'm not going to talk about that.
Wow. Well, here's Pat. Let's see, I tried to call and chat off air. Huh.
This, Peter, I think you should not read that.
I shouldn't read it?
Well, I don't know, because he wanted to chat off air.
Well, we're not going to chat off air. But let me see.
No, I know you're not chatting off air. I'm just saying, I don't know.
It's too long. Okay, we can always do it. All right, you're the boss.
Thank you.
I just work
I like
here.
That.
I just work here. All right. Here's Derek in Madison Heights. Derek, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, what's going on, my friend? Long-time listener.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
I just wanted to say that these sit-in things that are going on in Detroit and New York are, I mean, the people's minds are in the right place.
Yeah.
I mean, but the willingness is not there. People, when we dissented from England and the revolution, people were willing to die for a cause. And I think that is the singularity that is missing from my generation and maybe the one behind me and before me.
Dude, what do you mean,
Derek? I mean, don't you think these people...
Like a hunger strike? What are you talking about?
I guess if I saw police officers armed with assault rifles like they were in Denver, carrying flash grenades and all these, I mean, I'd be out of there.
I run.
I got to tell you.
Peter taught me how to never get arrested.
Well,
it's called run!
So on the other hand, a lot of these people stood up to these heavily armed robocops, and they're totally inappropriate
action.
They're doing
it. They're not leaving. That's why they're getting arrested.
Well, we're trying to do it in groups of thousands. Obviously, that's going to draw too much attention.
Too much.
No, we want that attention.
If somebody wants to do something like, say, covert operations in our country, what do? Do they send in a group of thousands of people to go into Libya and dissent from their government or whatever?
Well, here's what it's all about, right? It's all about democracy. You know, Michael Moore's film, Capitalism, A Love Story, he says at the end, what's the alternative? And he says democracy. That's where we have relatively equal social weight within a society. In other words, you don't have, maybe you have people that are, you know, on a capitalist side, they're a little better waged and have more money and nicer house and all that. But ultimately, in the political arena, we're equals. It's like in a, it's a weird analogy. I'm filled with them. Like in a steam bath.
That's for sure.
Down at the old downtown Y.
The Schwitz?
No. There was a Schwitz on Oakland Avenue. How do you know about that? It turned into a sex club. Were you there?
No, because you told me about it 10 years ago.
Anyway, I was never there. I heard about it.
No, you heard about it.
I heard about it. But at the downtown Y, there was a steam bath. And in the steam bath...
Is that when you were with the bishop?
Yeah. There was everybody in there. Religious leaders. There was a guy that was head of...
You tell me way too much.
I do. The head of TMI. There is... you know, in other words, everybody was equal in there because everybody only had a towel on. Right?
Right.
And the same thing. We ought to have that kind of... political uniformity in terms of social weight, social power within society. We don't want this 1%, particularly because the 1% is filled with a bunch of rich, greedy lunkheads. And why do you call them lunkheads? Because they dropped the ball mightily on the economy. And we don't want to pay for that. We want them to pay for it, for one thing, two things. One, they caused it. And two, they got the money. And why we shouldn't is, A, we don't have the money, and B, we didn't cause it. So I think that's easy enough. All right, time for me to say bye-bye, and thank you, Derek. Not that I'm just getting rid of you, but...
The show's over.
The show is over. But stay tuned. Got an interesting interview that's along these lines with Jeffrey Winters, an author.
And also Bill Ayers.
Palling around with Bill Ayers again. But this is an interesting interview. And one of the things I took from Jeffrey Winters, who's coming up, I shouldn't give it away, is the idea, and I said this earlier, that this movement now and its ideas, forgetting about everything else, its ideas is the first challenge to money power, to the power of wealth in this society in over 100 years.
Yeah.
So.
Right on.
Athena, Sarah.
Thank you.
Ron as well, who may be listening or sleeping.
Right.
Thanks for your help. And we'll have a podcast up at noon today. Jolene Jordan, thank you.
Peter, thank you as always.
And next
thanks
week.
To our listeners.
Yeah.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar.
Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
How old's the roof on your home? If it's over 15 years old, how much longer will it last before the leaks begin? Think about the damage. Then think about this. If it's time for a new roof, call Sears to get your roofing done right. And if you call Sears right now, you'll save $500. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears licensed fully insured contractors install a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call Sears for a free in-home consultation. 1-877-938-1414. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So if you need a new roof, call Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for being with me. Peter Werby here. You know, I just read the New York Times today, and here's a big headline. Top earners doubled share of nation's income. The top 1% of earners more than doubled their share of the nation's income over the last three decades. This really wasn't information that was making the headlines in the major media, to be sure. And, in fact, I'm wearing a pin now that says 99%, and that, as many of you may realize, has to do with this series of occupations, including Occupy Detroit, that's ongoing. And the idea is that there's the 99% of us, and then there's the 1% that actually earn all the money and to which power accrues. And this idea isn't particularly new. There's been studies on power and wealth that go pretty far back in American history. And I was thinking of some of the ones that influenced me, and there's a considerable number of them. One of the first ones was done by C. Wright Mills called The Power Elite. It was done in 1956. There's a incredible book by William Domhoff called Who Rules America? Another one, The Rich and the Super Rich by Ferdinand Lundberg. Those were done in the 1960s. And then the idea of all of this and who rules America, and most people would say, oh, the people, we have democratic elections. That's who rules it. We know, you know, as Bob Dylan said, money doesn't talk, it swears. But still, we think of this as a democratic country. But this is even more relevant right now, and a book has come my way that really just hits it right at the right time. It's called Oligarchy. And if all of you don't know what that means, we'll get to that as a first definition. It's written by Jeffrey Winters, and he's a professor of political economy at Northwestern University. We're reaching him at his office in Chicago. Jeffrey Winters, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be your guest.
Now, that phrase, and I said maybe a lot of people don't know what it means. 100 years ago, people were much more acquainted with phrases like oligarchy and plutocracy and what have you. Give us an idea of what the oligarchy particularly refers to, the title of your new book.
Sure. Oligarchy refers to being powerful because you have wealth. So there's a lot of ways that people can be powerful throughout history. You might be a warlord and you have armaments, and that makes you powerful. You might hold public office, president, senator, and certainly that makes you vastly more powerful than the average citizen. You might be someone who's able to mobilize many, many hundreds of thousands or millions of people, like Mahatma Gandhi did or like Martin Luther King did. These people have what we call mobilizational power. Well, there's one more category of power, which is wealth. Wealth is a form of power. Not everyone who's wealthy necessarily uses their wealth for political purposes, but a certain number of people do. And so any society like the United States, which has a highly concentrated situation of wealth stratification, empowers some of its citizens vastly more than the average. And so the result is, in a place like the United States, we have both democracy and oligarchy interacting with each other, sometimes peacefully, sometimes at opposite ends. And we're in a moment, as you just said, where in this movement of the 99 versus 1%, this is really the first time, Peter, in maybe 70 or 80 years that the focus in the United States has really been on the problem of the injustices and the disenfranchisement that comes from concentrated wealth and power in a few hands.
Jeffrey Winters, I mentioned that the reform movements of 100 years ago are beginning in the late 19th century and through for quite a few years. Besides oligarchy, the rule of a few with wealth, that it also plutocracy, and which means, if I remember right, the rule of the rich. What's the difference between the two?
In fact, we have a number of words that refer to largely the same thing.
Okay.
So in fact, plutocrats, oligarchs, we can just think of them as, for our purposes, as being pretty much synonymous.
Okay.
The key underlying issue there is that we allow in society certain people to be super empowered because they are vastly wealthier than most other citizens, and that the political system is open to the use of wealth for political means.
Well, isn't that, I think most people would take that for granted. I mean, obviously, this country itself was established by some well-meaning men who were all oligarchs, right?
Well, they were all oligarchs, but a couple things can be said. First, they came from a European system where the main thing they were worried about was not just the concentration of wealth and the distortion of the political system because of that, but they were worried about an aristocracy, which was sort of a transgenerational nobility that ran political systems by birth. So the main thing that the founders in the United States sort of sterilized the U.S. system against was aristocracy. So we don't have a nobility, we don't have kings, and so on. What they didn't address, and maybe because some of them were oligarchs themselves, they didn't address the problem that actually the ancient Romans did address, which is the concentrated power of wealth. And what the Romans did that the American founders didn't do is that the Romans set up something called a tribunate of the plebs, where plebs refer to the plebeians. The plebeians are the poor, the ordinary people. And a whole separate institution was set up where membership was exclusively on the basis of being poor.
Hmm.
And so to counterbalance the power of the wealthy in the Senate and in other institutions, and everyone accepted that just as you've said, wealth it captures democracy and institutions, it was only by specifically setting up some kind of check and balance based on the wealthy against the poor that, that any kind of genuine democratic balance was able to come out. And we don't have a tribunate of the plebs in the United States.
Well, aside from the ideologies and theories of, say, socialism and communism and anarchism, the people, I think most people assume that there is going to be a hierarchy of wealth and of power. But there's almost, I don't know, is it a leftover from feudalism that people expect wealth to be administered responsibly? And because, as it was during feudalism, the lords were expected to protect the common people. The common people were supposed to work and provide wealth for the lord. But I think often that the anger would come when the oligarchs didn't perform their social duties. Does that make any sense?
Well, you know, I would look at it slightly differently. I would say this. In the American political system and in its ideologies, we tolerate differences between people. We tolerate inequalities of various kinds. There are people who are better or worse at all kinds of things. There are people who are smarter. There are some people who play the violin better than I do. So we tolerate, we don't expect perfect equality among everyone in our society, but we do expect equal power. And so, the problem is that there's actually no power imbalance that we tolerate as much as the power imbalance that comes with wealth. So if we could, it would be somewhat more ideal if we could separate the two. That is, if we could both say we allow stratification in society. Some people are more ambitious or whatever the case may be, have better opportunities. They get to be more wealthy than the average person. There are things we can do to make sure that there's no easy translation between being wealthy and getting many more, as it were, votes in the political system, a louder voice, being the only people being heard. That is something that I think offends the average American, that just because you're rich, you have the ear of politicians, you're able to shape policies in ways that the rest are not able to do. That's unacceptable. And by the way, it's also, it's not something you could probably ever completely get away from, which is the power of wealth, but it certainly can be dramatically reduced from what it is in the United States. There are steps we can take to make sure that concentrated wealth doesn't have such a loud voice and an overwhelming voice in the American political system.
Well, this is a good point, maybe to go back a bit in history. My guest on the Peter Werby Show is Jeffrey Winters. He's a professor of political economy at Northwestern University. He's just written Oligarchy, and it's available through Amazon. There'll be a link to it on my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. And let's go back to 1913, because there was the 16th Amendment passed, the 17th Amendment, the Federal Reserve was established, and there are some people, particularly on the political right, that say that's when it all began to go to hell. There's a number, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but there's a number of, I don't know what you'd call them, videos, let's say, generically, videos online that say this was the year, you know, that the progressives were able to, you know, distort American democracy and get these two amendments passed and also set up the Federal Reserve. Tell us about 1913 and the importance of these, the elements I just mentioned, if you would, please.
Well, 1913 is actually a replay of 1894. So 1894, with the populist movement and Williams Jennings Bryan and so on, there was a very strong upswell of people at the height of the robber baron era. And what they were reacting to is that however much wealth had been uneven in the United States in the earlier founding years of the country, it was in fact a lot more egalitarian than it became. And by the late 19th century, wealth became vastly, vastly more concentrated, and it became sort of more obviously used in distorting ways. And so in 1894, the very first permanent federal income tax was passed, and it was exclusively on just a fraction of the top 1% of the population. So it was, in a sense, a wealth tax. It was never intended to be an income tax on the rest of the population. That law was immediately overturned by the Supreme Court, and it took 18 years to finally come up with the 16th Amendment. And then in 1913, the federal income tax was once again imposed. And it was only imposed on roughly the top 1% of Americans. So 99% did not pay federal income tax. And that was an expression of the power of movements from below to actually get the wealthiest to pay a larger share of funding a system that was benefiting them tremendously. And that was seen as fair, but the oligarchs didn't like it. And they spent the rest of the 20th century working against the federal income tax that fell on them exclusively. And by the middle, and certainly by the end of the 20th century, the tax burden had been moved downward to the rest of society, and actually it is now regressive. The very, very wealthiest Americans in the United States, and it's a group that would fit roughly in the size of University of Michigan Stadium. That's how many people I'm talking about.
I love that analogy. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so we're talking about a relatively small slice of the population that could watch a football game. They pay, first of all, they make on average per year $350 million. That's just their income on their wealth. And they pay a lower percentage of their overall income in taxes than the average secretary or plumber or worker in the United States does.
Let me just interrupt, because what I always wonder, I mean, that's more money in a year than the entire population of the city I live in makes, probably the whole surrounding area. What do these guys do that they can come up with income of that magnitude? Is this all hedge funds and stuff like that?
Well, a lot of it is hedge funds, but you know, it's also the fact that they're able to keep a larger share of the money that they do make. They're making it globally. They also have a lot of it in offshore havens and in secret companies. So it's a very complex way that they're making this money. But you have to realize also, they're making money on their money. This is what we call capital income versus compensation income. So most of us make compensation income. We get a check for work we do. But the very, very wealthiest Americans make money on money. And as we know, with the capital gains tax, that is taxed at only 15%. And it's not a surprise that the very, very powerful people at the top who make money on money were able to win a victory of not having their income from their wealth be taxed in the same way that my tax rate on my compensation is taxed, which is I'm in a higher tax bracket, just as an ordinary professor at a university, than the very wealthiest Americans are. And this means that they have exceedingly low tax rates. Let me give you a very interesting number.
Sure.
about the concentration of wealth, just so people realize. If we compare the United States today with Imperial Rome, and Imperial Rome was a system that was run by, you know, roughly 500 to 1,000 senators at the top, and it was essentially a slave and farmer society. The gap between the very wealthiest at the top in Rome and the average citizen down below was about 10,000 to 1 in terms of wealth. In the United States today, it is 20,000 to 1. So we have twice the wealth concentration at the top, and I'm comparing roughly the top 1,000 Americans or so to the average person of the bottom 90%.
That's extraordinary. And you know, I also do a phone-in talk show, and sometimes I'll get these angry guys, usually working-class men, that say, their voice is almost trembling, and they'll say, it's their money, they made it, who are you to try to take it away from them? Because they see where, or they suspect where you're going, Jeffrey Winters, is that there ought to be greater wealth and income equality, there ought to be higher taxes on the wealthy, and the idea that that the government is trying to take away these people's money really offends them almost on an ethical basis. What do you say to that?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that a person like that is imagining is that someday that might be them, right? So they're thinking, well, I might be very wealthy someday, and I certainly wouldn't want a government taxing me and possibly redistributing through programs on education, health, and so on, that other people in society might get taken care of. So I think that sentiment is a combination of two things. One, it's a kind of vicious selfishness, but it's also just a misreading of the individual's own class position and where they're ever going to end up in their lives. And I think the Horatio Alger stories in the United States and a lot of propaganda that comes out of think tanks in the United States has done a good job of getting a number of Americans, like the ones you're talking about, to identify with and even defend the super wealthy. It's against their interests to do so. It's against the interests of their children and the future of their children to do so. I'm not talking about taking away all the money and having an absolutely egalitarian society in the United States. I think that's utopian. Doesn't make any sense. But I do think that we can do a lot to ask of the people at the very top, which we've always done in the progressive tradition of the United States. We've always had the view that those who have vastly more take on more responsibility for bearing the cost of our whole community so that our entire community is healthy. There are people at the bottom who are vastly less able to pay. They're struggling. They're working hard, and they're not necessarily making it. And so progressivity in our tax system has been a long tradition, and I think it's important that we keep it. We currently don't have it.
I wonder why they even want to keep so much money. In fact, I want to get to your thoughts about what you call the income defense industry, and maybe I'll lead into that by talking about this. Warren Buffett once said that if it took away 99% of my wealth, it would not change my standard of living one bit. So when you talk about somebody having $50 billion or poorer guys like the mayor of New York having 10 or 11 billion, you could confiscate 98% of their wealth. They'd still have tens of millions of dollars left. They would still be probably still in the top 1%. Why do they want all this money? And what form is it? I mean, when you talk about Bill Gates being worth $50 billion, I mean, if someone said, Bill, we want you to bring all your money tomorrow and put it on the table, I mean, he couldn't do it, right? I mean, it's not there. I mean, I wonder if there's even any really there.
Well, a lot of it is you've hit on a number of really important things. First of all, the form of wealth has changed dramatically over history. So, for example, in medieval Europe, if I was incredibly wealthy, I would almost for sure hold my wealth in the form of land and agriculture. And I would control a lot of peasant farmers under me, but I would also have to spend a huge amount of my wealth to defend my land and my realm directly. So I would have to build castles, I would have to build moats, I would have to raise knights and militias, and I would have a lot of threats coming horizontally from other lords and other knights in the system. Today, for Warren Buffett or for Bill Gates, if they have $20 billion one day, 1 year, and then the next year they somehow are able to increase that to $40 billion, they don't, and here's the remarkable thing about the United States today, they don't have to spend one penny in increased defenses for their wealth. The numbers change, but unlike in the past where you had to have expenditures to defend your wealth, it turns out that we all jointly defend the wealth, and we do it through our army, through our police force. We all pay for it jointly, and this is a remarkable period in history where the money is held electronically and digitally in banks. It's held in the form of stocks, and therefore, by the way, it is very vulnerable to the health and well-being of the system itself. They may have some in the form of gold, jewels, and so on, but a lot of their wealth is literally on paper. And if that paper, whether it's currency or stock shares or banks, if it becomes worthless, the money disappears very quickly. That's different from wealth in land, wealth in cattle, and so on.
You know, this discussion is so important and to all of our well-being that I'm letting the time get away from it. I said I wanted to, I was reading an article you wrote called America's Income Defense Industry that was on Huffington Post in 2010, but I think we really should move into, and because we have about only about 3 or 4 minutes left with Jeffrey Winters, the author of Oligarchy. Brand new book, get it. You can find out what we're all facing when people are talking about 99%. It's all right in there. But anyway, you talk about, in your article, about that the income defense industry, which lobbyists and lawyers, which helped the wealthiest Americans avoid paying nearly $70 billion in taxes. Everyone's talking about fixing the tax code, that it shouldn't be millions and millions of words. We got, you know, simplistic ones from a couple of the Republican candidates. The president has talked about making alterations. What should we be doing? I mean, should we just, you know, people are saying tax the rich. That's one of the signs. I mean, some of the signs say eat the rich, but we're not going to go there. We're going to talk about the people that say tax the rich. Is that a good thing to do? And will it help the country? Will it help the economy?
It absolutely will help. We are running deficits, and the wealthy are able to pay, and there's no correlation in history between how much we tax the very wealthy and whether jobs get created. It's just a specious argument. Jobs were being created in the 50s and 60s at a very, very high rate, and the tax rate on the top bracket was 70%, which is twice what it is today. So the taxes that those at the very, very top who are able to pay them have to pay have nothing to do with job creation. It's just a lie. The income defense industry arose in the 60s and 70s. It is armies and armies of professionals, lawyers, accountants, lobbyists, whose sole function, the entire industry arises for one purpose only, to make sure that the very wealthiest Americans can first of all lower their tax brackets overall and then pay as low a percentage of their tax bracket as they possibly can. And that income defense industry, roughly right now, reduces the taxes for the very wealthy from the 35% bracket down to about 16% on average that they're paying. And so it's a very effective industry. And it takes advantage of the 71,684 pages of tax code. I actually am very in favor of simplifying our tax system, but I'm not in favor of the very wealthiest and the very poorest paying the same rate. I think what we can do is we can have a graduated system of brackets where everybody in their bracket simply pays the full rate in their bracket with no deductions, and we can have that from 0% for the very poorest down at the bottom all the way up to 70% for the very highest at the top. Simple way to do it, but a graduated system.
Now, they just did a poll. In fact, it was in the New York Times today as well, where they said that I should have printed out, but it was something like almost 70% of people polled said that they felt the Republicans had the interests of the rich primarily as their focus. And interestingly, about 30 or 40% thought the same of the Democrats, but they're probably both correct. But you say also in your article that Obama's bark is worse than his bite. Now, many of us expect the Democratic Party is going to defend the interests of the middle class and the working class and the poor. But if all we've got is a bark from them, we can't expect too much. So we have mass-based movement. That's often been the basis of change throughout American history. Is there any political will other than in the streets to actually take a bite out of this inequality?
Well, I like to joke with my students sometimes that my definition of the Republican Party is organized selfishness, and the definition of the Democratic Party is organized selfishness with guilt.
That's good.
And, yeah, and it's not such a huge difference between the two. Both parties are bought and paid for by the same small number of people at the top, the one half of 1% called the donor class. The myth of Obama is actually that he came to power on the basis of millions and millions of small donations. In fact, the small donations and the grassroots movement for Obama launched him at the beginning, but once he became a major contender against Hillary Clinton in the primaries, huge money came in from Wall Street and bundlers and everyone else. And Obama accepted that money. And when he was inaugurated, he paid back those forces by putting basically Wall Street representatives into his cabinet. And that's why we've seen policies which have not been responding to the people at the bottom and have been responding to Wall Street. In fact, Obama has been nothing but worried from the get-go about whether business likes him or not.
Hmm.
And what he really needs to understand is that he's going to be a one-termer if he doesn't win back the enthusiasm of the people down below that got him there in the first place, at least in terms of their votes, not in terms of their money.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on my show, Professor Jeffrey Winters. He's teaches political economy at Northwestern University. We're talking to him in Chicago. He has a brand new book out called Oligarchy. That's the 1%, folks, published by Cambridge University Press. It's available through Amazon. I'll have a direct link to it on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Thank you so much for being on the broadcast.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. You know, this is the 50th anniversary of the week in which Dwight W. Eisenhower, the President of the United States from 1953 to 1961, was made in his final speech, talked about the military-industrial complex. I bet every one of you listening have heard that phrase before, and probably a lot of you know what it means. Some of you may know exactly what it means, but I suspect there's a bit of confusion about what it all means. Everybody knows we have war industries. Detroit was the arsenal of democracy during World War II, and weapons production plays a role in the overall economy and what have you. But let's take a look at actually what Dwight D. Eisenhower meant by all of this. And we're going to bring to our microphones Gareth Porter. He is an investigative journalist and a historian specializing in U.S. national security policy. His most recent book is Perils of Dominance, Imbalance of Power, and the Road to War in Vietnam. And Gareth Porter is at his office in Arlington, Virginia. Welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be on.
Do you think that's true, that people, it's one of those phrases that almost everyone's heard, but not everyone knows the exact definition of or can't really conjure up what it's entirely all about in an accurate sense?
Well, I think people have a general notion that this has to do with the military and people in the private sector, and that is correct, that what Eisenhower was trying to get at is there was a new power combination that made for a serious threat to American democracy and American liberties. And what he meant by that was that the military services, who were already, extremely powerful, arguably the most powerful institutions in American society, had linked up with the arms industry and the military contractors who were getting the contracts to manufacture missiles and airplanes and tanks and so forth, had become political allies of the military, and together they constituted a new form of political power. Now, what people don't know, I'm sure, is that Eisenhower had originally intended in that speech to include the congressional part of this new sort of political power combine. He was going to refer to it as the congressional military industrial complex. He eventually decided against that, but in a way it's too bad, because it would have further illuminated the nature of that political power that he really did fear in terms of the future of this country. And it's interesting that he began to work on the speech as early as 1958. He had been working on it for more than 2 years. So he cared about this very, very much, and the interesting question is why he, in fact, waited until his farewell address to bring it up.
Well, I want to talk about that for sure. Let's get a little sort of snapshot of President Dwight Eisenhower. Now, here was one of the most distinguished generals of World War II. He had spent his life in the military, so you would think that he wouldn't have any problem with a military-industrial complex, even if it was growing in power. Usually military men, like in any bureaucracy, the more power, the more prestige, the more people, everything that can accrue to a government bureaucracy, the better in the minds of the people.
Well, that's a very interesting point, an important point, and I'm glad that you've raised it, because Eisenhower, of course, as a military hero of World War II, once he retired from the military and entered politics, he then separated himself from the institutional interests of the Army, which, of course, he had been a part of, and he became a very different sort of political figure. He was, of course, as president, he had his own political agenda. He had a whole set of issues that he cared about, which transcended the interests of the Army and of the military services more generally.
Well, he ran as a peace candidate in 1952.
He did run as a peace candidate, and I would say even more significantly, throughout his two administrations, Eisenhower was very clearly determined to avoid a new war. He felt very strongly that it would be a disaster for the United States to get into another war, and that war would either be a war against the Soviet Union, which would be the most disastrous thing to have happened to the United States, or it would be a brush fire war on the periphery of the Soviet Union or of China. And in either case, Eisenhower was absolutely dead set against it. He, of course, as I document in a book that I published a few years ago on the U.S. path to war in Vietnam, Eisenhower was very much opposed to the United States becoming involved militarily in 1954, when the French were suffering defeat at Dien Bien Phu, and some people in the military, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or at least some of them, were pushing for the United States to enter the war, perhaps by dropping a few atom bombs on the Viet Minh troops. Eisenhower absolutely had no intention of allowing that to happen.
Let's be clear about that. Was actually advocated. I mean, this was one.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
so
right. And so that was really one of the first instances. It wasn't the first, but it was one of the first instances in which Eisenhower rejected the recommendations by the military leadership by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to either go to war or to threaten to go to war. I mean, there was a time in 1954 when the Joint Chiefs were recommending, calling for an ultimatum to the Soviet Union, saying if the Soviets didn't make the diplomatic concessions to the United States involving Eastern Europe, that that it would be a serious, there would be a serious threat to the regime in the Soviet Union, which clearly implied that the United States would make war on the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to emphasize that Eisenhower was indeed determined not to get into a war, and in so doing, he found himself very much at odds with the military leadership on a whole series of issues, including with the, in the case of the U.S. Army, their desire to have more ground forces, to have a larger manpower, and to have the equipment that they would need to be able to intervene on the periphery of the Sino-Soviet bloc. That was a fundamental interest of the Army, and they pushed it very strongly, and Eisenhower simply said no.
Mm-hmm.
He cut their budget severely, cut their manpower below what it had been at the end of the Korean War, and essentially put himself at odds with the Army brass for the remainder of his two terms in office. And so there was a big campaign that the Army waged against him, which I would argue, along with the campaign that the Air Force waged against Eisenhower during his two terms of office, was the real reason why he felt so strongly about this this military-industrial complex, because they had really targeted him for abuse, for attack, both directly and mostly through the news media and through friendly members of Congress.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Gareth Porter, and this week marks the 50th anniversary of President Dwight Eisenhower's farewell speech in which he warned of the rise of a military-industrial complex. And Gareth Porter has just written the piece for Counterpunch.org, From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. And one of the things that you say in it is 50 years after Dwight D. Eisenhower's 1961 speech, pardon me, on January 17th, on the military-industrial complex, that threat has morphed into a far more powerful and sinister force than Eisenhower could have imagined. Now, that's kind of, that phrase, kind of a tough pill for most people to swallow. Even in these days of deficit overrun, there's a little squeak about maybe we could reduce the military budget a little, but I doubt if they will. But sinister, I mean, that's a pretty strong word.
It is strong, and I think that it's absolutely justified by the record of the past decade or so in particular, where you have a series of developments in which the U.S. military and the other national security agencies or institutions of the U.S. executive branch have really obtained new and very far-reaching power to make war in ways that are really beyond the ability of the U.S. Congress and the American people, of course, to be able to control. And I'm referring here to two or three things. One, the CIA's Operations Directorate got the approval from the Bush White House, and if this has continued, of course, under Obama, to have very wide discretion, very large degree of freedom to use drone strikes to attack individuals who they suspect are somehow associated with the Taliban, either Afghan or Pakistani Taliban or the Al-Qaeda people in Pakistan. And this is all happening on the Pakistani side of the border. They have such wide freedom that it's not necessary for them to have really sort of the normal intelligence basis for a decision to use lethal force.
Let alone a congressional declaration of war that's called for in the Constitution. Yeah.
So this is really an unprecedented degree of freedom given to a secret organization essentially to continue to make war. The other thing that has happened, which in a way parallels that, is that the Special Operations Forces, Special Operations Command, in its regional commands that are made up of task forces of special operations units, has gotten the same kind of freedom of operation to go into countries like Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia and elsewhere. Of course, Afghanistan as well, and in Iran and in Iraq, they are carrying out the night raids or targeted raids against people that they suspect are enemies. And again, these raids, these targeted raids, which result very often in killing people, and very often they are innocent civilians, are based on, in many cases, only the most tenuous and very dubious intelligence. So, I mean, this is another case where an institution has been given unprecedented freedom of action.
Well, I was going to say, though, is this really, is this the military-industrial complex, or is this just the extension of executive military power beyond the scope of what had been previously?
Well, I think that you're right to distinguish between what has happened in recent years and the original formulation of the military-industrial complex. This is based on the power that the military and its allies have had for decades now, but it goes well beyond that. It is indeed a new kind of, I would argue, a new kind of state formation in which both military forces, I mean, this really, the Special Operations Forces Command, constitutes de facto a kind of fourth or fifth, if you will, military service. I mean, technically it is not a military service, but the degree of freedom and budget and prestige that it's been given during the Bush, George W. Bush and Obama administrations really does make it a de facto additional military service. And so you have really a very new development here in terms of military the power of a military service or de facto military service to make war without very much regulation or control or even, you know, being able to know what's going on. And I've written stories about the Special Operations Forces and have pointed out that other agencies, including the CIA, by the way, have been complaining that they cannot get any information about the targeting that Special Operations Forces are carrying out.
Hmm. Well, let's go ahead.
Yeah,
finish.
Same thing is true for the CIA. The CIA targeting for drone strikes is being kept from other agencies of the U.S. government, other intelligence agencies, for example. The military intelligence people are unable to get information about what the basis of the targeting by the CIA is, because it's being done on the fly, as it were. It's not vetted at all. It's not being checked out by disinterested analysts, if you will. It's being, basically the CIA, as is the case with the Special Operations Forces, are basically finding the intelligence or making the intelligence and then using it instantly for operations. And this is a terrible thing to have happen because, you're the judge and executioner at the same time.
Well, let's do that. I've never done this, but I'm going to try a little technique here. I'm going to pretend like I'm this is a phone-in show, and I'm going to call.
Sure.
I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to take a call. Hi, you're on the air with Gareth Porter. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, I've just heard what your guest said, but I don't think he realizes this is the 21st century. It's not 20th century positional regular warfare. We're not fighting armies that that are in trenches or something like that. And what our military is attempting to do is to keep us safe. And things we have to do things on the fly. We can't just be bound by 18th century rules or even 20th century rules. That if we want to keep ourselves safe, we've got to entrust these judgment calls to the people that are on the front lines. And I have to tell you that if a few people get ground up in the process, well, I'd rather it's them than us. How do you answer that call?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is indeed a very common response to the situation that we're facing here. And I think the real problem, there are two problems. One is that I think a caller with that sort of position is failing to recognize a fundamental reality of the 20th and 21st century United States. And that is that whether it's the military-industrial complex or what I call the permanent war state, these military and paramilitary institutions who are entrusted with this kind of power to make war are not disinterested institutions. They're not run by officials who are capable of or willing to separate out their own personal and institutional interests from the interests of the United States and the American people. And what we have seen over and over again, and Eisenhower was the first, I think, the first major political figure to recognize this and to say so, at least to imply so publicly, that these leaders of the military were operating in their own interests. I mean, they had interest in getting as many planes, as many missiles, as many troops, and as big of a budget as they possibly could. And Eisenhower understood that they were perfectly capable of using underhanded tactics. The Air Force, for example, put forward basically fabricated intelligence in order to try to put pressure on Eisenhower, first of all, to manufacture more fighter planes, or more bombers, excuse me, and then secondly, to have an urgent rush program of missile building.
Which is what Kennedy ran on in 1960,
exactly.
Dishonestly.
And my point is that Eisenhower understood that these military figures were acting on the interests of their own institutions and their own personal interests rather than the interests of the American people. And that's really the fundamental problem that we have here in the 21st century as well. You have these organizations who want to have, drone strikes. They want to have more and more opportunities for night raids in more and more countries, and they're getting it. The consequences of that are not making us more safe. And I can tell you that I have written one story quoting a figure who has been in touch with people involved in the drone campaign personally, and they're directly involved in the program, and they believe, based on what they have gotten from the CIA itself, that the consequences of the drone strike program have been to strengthen the ability of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda related organizations to recruit in Waziristan, where this program has been carried out. They believe very firmly, very strongly, that the consequence has been to strengthen the support for the Taliban rather than to weaken it. And so, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we face constantly, that the military force that is being applied by these institutions, supposedly to make us safer, is having exactly the opposite effect.
Gareth Porter is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He's written recently From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of President Eisenhower's farewell speech, where he warned about the rise of a military-industrial complex. Let's talk in just the few minutes we have left about the economic effects of all of this. The conservatives talk about they want these free market, Friedman economics, but they, like everyone else, depends on this Keynesian model, which essentially is the government being this huge supplier of cash into the economy. And we have this situation where $1 trillion a year is transferred from private wealth, those of us that earn it, to the state. The state then disperses it essentially to the military industrial complex. So it really is all, and as you correctly say, it's so we have a permanent war state, but it's a foundation, a fundamental of our economy. I mean, but what happens if you pull the struts out from under?
Well, it is a fundamental of our economy. There's no question about that. The real issue, however, is whether military Keynesianism is an effective form of stimulation of the economy. I mean, the reality is that when you buy missiles and tanks, and they're used up in a war, They don't really contribute in any way to the furtherance of economic growth in the United States. Once, you know, you spent the money, it's sort of, it's a waste. Whereas if you, if it was non-military Keynesianism, if you were investing in transportation infrastructure or bridges and education and so forth, these are investments that have further knock-on effects, which, you know, involve obviously furthering the economic and social development of the United States. So it's not, in fact, Keynesianism in any meaningful sense, that is to say, Keynesianism in a sense that you're really furthering, you're maximizing economic development or economic growth.
It's ineffective Keynesianism. In other words, you would get much more bang for your buck, so to speak. Well, maybe that's a weird analogy.
What is very effective in doing, of course, is buying off members of Congress by, you know, spreading the contracts for the military programs across as many districts of Congress as possible, and they've been very clever about doing that, so that virtually every member of Congress has something in his district that he has to protect, and you know, his vote then becomes subject to pressure not only from the contractor, but from the workers in his district who get paid by the military contractor, despite the fact that it's not an effective way of promoting economic growth. It works politically to keep the status quo.
And there are some jobs. Not like they produce none. So, yeah, so if you start saying, well, we're going to cut the military budget, which we could and still
remain
safe.
Right, and as the economy falters more and more, when you have a sector of the economy that is continuing to grow, as the military sector has, it's doubled since the end of the last decade, from 1998 to 2008, it more than doubled. So when you have a sector that continues to grow, of course it takes on greater and greater importance in terms of jobs and in terms of the politics of jobs in Congress.
Well, Gareth Porter, at the end, in fact, we're at the end of our interview as well, of your article about this subject, From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. It's at counterpunch.org, and there'll be a link on my website as well. You say the only thing missing from the picture that you described, where people oppose this kind of spending, is a grassroots political movement organized specifically to demand an end to the permanent warfare state. That's not on the agenda, and there's certainly no congressional political movement towards that. So we're just going to have to suck it up.
Nothing exists at this point that is even remotely close to what is needed to push back against this development. But I want to emphasize, and I tried to do that in my article, that this formation, this new formation that we've seen develop over the last 10 to 20 years particularly, is politically vulnerable. And it's vulnerable because particularly you have a combination of a war which is increasingly very unpopular, that is Afghanistan, which in a way parallels the Vietnam, post-Vietnam situation, where the American people turned against Vietnam so strongly that it then led to strong opposition to high levels of military spending for another 15 years or so.
Let me get you to give the two other ones quickly, because we're almost out of time. Sorry.
Yes, so opposition to the war plus opposition to high military spending are now very well documented. And then you have, of course, the issue of the deficit and the necessity to really cut the budget very radically in order to deal with that. And really, you know, that has to involve very deep cuts in the military budget, because that represents 56% at least, perhaps it's more than that now, of discretionary spending in the federal budget.
I want to thank you so much, Gareth Porter. Gareth's first name is spelled G-A-R-E-T-H. Gareth Porter, his articles are easily available through a Google search. His latest, and I think sums up what we just talked about, From Military-Industrial Complex to the Permanent War State, is available at counterpunch.org. There'll also be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. This is an issue we need to face. Gareth Porter, thanks for being on my program.
Thanks very much, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
Getting you back to the rock.
Bravado. I like it.
On the Riff.